Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Live from our nation's capital, it's Dean Richards Sunday Morning here on WGN. Shwani, it's an okay day.
Yeah, here, it's just an okay day here, too.
it's a little overcast here right now, as I was mentioning to Rick a couple of minutes ago. Torrential rain here yesterday. Non-stop torrential rain. Here yesterday. I like to think the bad weather follows me wherever I go.
It sounds like it.
I like to think I have a dark cloud over my head no matter where I am.
Well, there's been a dark cloud over downtown Chicago here. We had rain as the start of another half marathon began this morning, Dean, closing all kinds of streets downtown.
Yes,
that was the main reason that I left.
Andy was the one that was mentioning it as he came in this morning.
I took your
did
place.
Andy get caught?
Yeah. Yeah, I took your place. I was getting off Lakeshore Drive, and I got a nice tour of the city, though, this morning.
I don't think it's going to be that much different now that we're in our new location on Wacker Drive and not at Tribune Tower, which was any marathon or race or anything where they closed streets. You just couldn't get to Tribune Tower. It was ridiculous. So I don't know if that's going to change very much. It doesn't sound like it, according to Andy.
No.
Doesn't sound like it is going to very much.
Well, one thing has changed. You can see the racers headed north on Columbus right outside the newsroom window.
Yeah. It's too bad the windows don't open so we could shout things out at them.
Of course, nice things,
I almost
things, right?
would always have something to say to them.
And it wouldn't be good morning either.
I am going to miss, after all the marathons, seeing the emaciated runners coming in front of our window at the old the dump that we used to be at.
There we go with the dump again. Eating the giant donuts after the race is over.
I'm going to miss that. A couple of years we passed out donuts to all the healthy athletes.
Well, now they can go inside and lay down in the mattress store.
Is that mattress store opened over there?
No, I don't think it has yet.
I haven't been over there anymore. You follow my prediction. Since we moved from Tribune Tower, look for all the stores on Michigan Avenue to begin closing and boarding up. I say we were the ones that brought the foot traffic to Michigan Avenue.
Following our lead.
Yes.
So I'm here in Washington, D.C., because the red carpet for Tom Cruise's new movie, Mission Impossible Fallout, which is, that, believe it or not, is the sixth Mission Impossible movie that Tom Cruise has done.
Really? Six?
It's the sixth one that he has done. And I saw it last night at the Air and Space Museum. They have an IMAX theater there.
Ooh.
And first of all, the Air and Space Museum was amazing. We were actually supposed to be doing this morning's broadcast from the Air and Space Museum, and there was some technical glitch, something, I don't know. Although we tested it out and everything worked perfectly, of course, this morning, nothing's working perfectly. So we had to make the mad dash to come back to the hotel, which is also fine because now I can do the show without my pants on, which is, is my preference. Anytime I can do the show without pants on, I'm always very happy.
As you gaze at the Jefferson Memorial.
I'm in my room. Nobody can see me. Is that wrong? Gazing at the Jefferson Memorial with no pants on?
No.
You make it sound like it's naughty.
Well, I was just adding to your comment a few minutes ago when you're talking with Rick about there's nothing wrong with that.
Shwani, this is the way the Founding Fathers would want me to be right now. You ask that John Thomas Jefferson guy who's on John Williams' show all the time. He'll tell you, if anyone knows about not having his pants on, it's Thomas Jefferson. So, anywho, we were supposed to do the show there today. We're not, but we're still going to talk to the guests that we have lined up from the Air and Space Museum, and they'll be joining us throughout the program this morning to just, kind of give us a talking tour, I guess you might say, of the museum. Have either of you ever been to the museum?
I've been there, but it's been a long time since I've been there.
No, I admit I have not. Been to D.C., but I haven't been to this museum.
Schwani, the history buff that you are, I can't believe it.
I know.
But, I mean, when you're in D.C., there are so many things for history buffs.
There's everywhere you look.
Mm-hmm. Everywhere you turn, there's something significant. But this Air and Space Museum is amazing. It's the history of air travel and space travel in America. When I walked in last night, there is the Wright brothers' airplane, mm-hmm. first flight that ever took place. They have space capsules and Skylab. I don't know if capsule. I don't think capsule is the right word for Skylabs, but for different space missions, the original Telstar communication satellite, the very first satellite that went into space, is on display there. It's amazing. It's really cool. So we're going to have guests throughout the morning telling us about the Air and Space Museum. And I will tell you more about the Tom Cruise movie, Mission Impossible Fallout, which is mind-blowingly great. Tom Cruise doing many of his own stunts, one of which resulted in him shattering his ankle while he was making this movie, is quite something to see. Hmm. So we'll have all of that for today. And then tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News, I will be live at the Air and Space Museum. The best made plans.
Stay tuned.
Our plan is to be live at the Air and Space Museum tomorrow morning. So we'll see if that works out. But we'll be able to actually show you some of the things that we're talking about today. Before we get to our first guest, though, Schwani, I wanted to just talk with you a little bit about this accident, the man that went overboard during the Mackinac race yesterday, because I know that you were very heavily involved with that. You actually did the race several times, right?
It was 4 years ago this weekend that we did a live report on the program. Yes, we were way up north by that time, near what are called the Manitou Islands, off of Traverse City, Michigan, and the Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore. But yeah, 4 years ago this weekend we did it. The search is resumed now for this boater who went overboard around 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Dean, I can tell you some of the roughest water I've ever been in when I was out on the press boat yesterday. Six to eight foot waves.
You were out on the water yesterday.
I was out on the water in the press boat covering
the... I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I just knew you had a history with it. I didn't know you were actually on the water yesterday.
I was with other colleagues yesterday afternoon watching the launch, as we've done in past years. But this water, with 6 to 8 foot waves... the wind out of the north, so that's another challenge as you're heading north, because you're kind of maneuvering into the wind, and you have to figure out a way to propel yourself. The boaters had all they could do to keep in line and get started properly yesterday. So watching some of the boats come up fairly close to us, I could see how the crew people on board were being challenged, because we were being challenged. We were being knocked around on the boat.
What do we know about the man who went overboard?
He has been an experienced boater. He's been involved in these races for about 10 years. He was on board a Medi, I think I'm saying that correctly, and Medi, which is certainly a very stable craft. And as is the case with all of the people participating in this race, you're required to wear what's called a PFD, a personal flotation device. So, you know, in all probability, he was wearing this. They are designed to inflate as soon as you hit the water, but for
a life jacket, basically.
A life jacket, basically. Yeah. But this is a sophisticated life jacket. It's pressurized. So if you hit the water, it's supposed to inflate immediately. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. We don't know. We just don't know what happened. There are other options. If it doesn't inflate, there's a cord you can pull to help it inflate, or you can blow into it to, manually inflate it. We just don't know what happened there. But he went in the water about 5 miles northeast of Navy Pier. And
he was on a boat, obviously, with others.
Yes.
Did they say anything? Has there been any statement from them at all about
not yet at this time?
What happened? Yeah. Whether he had the vest on?
Yeah.
Did he? I mean, with those kind of waves, I've been on the lake with waves, probably not as bad as you're describing, but you get tossed around, you know, pretty aggressively. That he may have just not been able to hold on to something and went overboard. Right?
That's probably what might have happened. You know, as you were close to the bow or along the sides of the boat, it's very possible that, you know, a sudden hit with those waves, you could get tossed over. So we haven't heard anything specifically from the crew members of this boat. We do know that racing was temporarily halted, and other boaters tried to assist in any type of search and rescue yesterday. When that happens, that's protocol. As of now, nothing, no results as of yet. But it would be very, it would not be too far-fetched to do this, to fall in, because the way we were being pushed around yesterday, if you weren't holding on to something, you could go over.
Is it, I don't want to paint a blacker picture than is necessary until we have more details, but is it possible that a person could survive in the lake for all these many hours now?
I guess it would be possible. The Lake Michigan water temperature is now in the 70s. So, you know, if it were the 50s or something like that, probably not. Hypothermia would set in. But with the warmer water, there could be a chance. But I'll tell you, these waves are the things that are complicating everything. And the fact that they had to call off the search when it got dark last night.
Right, right. It's a terrible story. Fortunately, we don't hear about these kinds of things very often with the Mackinac race. Usually it goes on without a hitch, but I imagine we'll be hearing more. I presume that the search is resumed.
It resumed at dawn this morning. Yes, Eric Rung is following this with us, and we hope to have some more information here later this morning.
Okay, very good. All right, well, we'll stay on top of that and everything going on this Sunday morning. A quick break, and we're back over at the Air and Space Museum to give you a little overview of this amazing place here in Washington, D.C., where I am live this morning. Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. It's a beautiful day. 9:24 now. Dean Richards live from Washington, D.C. this morning. We get ready for the red carpet with Tom Cruise and the cast of Mission Impossible Fallout. Tell you much more about that later on today. That will be taking place at the Museum of Air and Space here in Washington, D.C. And Russ Lee is the chair of their aeronautics department at the Air and Space Museum. Russ, thank you for joining us. Good morning. You're on WGN.
Good morning, Dean. It's my pleasure to join you today.
So talk to me a little about this amazing museum. I had mentioned on the show at the very beginning, we were scheduled to do the show at the museum itself this morning. There was a technical issue, but it's amazing. We actually saw the movie, the Mission Impossible movie, last night at the museum and had a chance to walk around a little bit and look at some of the exhibits. It's stunning. Can you give our listeners sort of a general overview of some of the things that you have on display there?
Well, it is a stunning space, Dean. And, you know, we get the equivalent of a mega city in attendance every year. We get 5 to 6 or 7 million people. And they come here to see the iconic artifacts of air and space, the Spirit of St. Louis, the original Spirit of St. Louis that Charles Lindbergh flew across the Atlantic Ocean in 1927, the Bell X-1 that Chuck Yeager became the first person to break the sound barrier in 1947. We have the original Wright Brothers 1903 Flyer, which was the airplane that made the first powered, controlled, heavier-than-air flight. And, you know, hundreds and hundreds of other artifacts, space, air, aircraft and also small things like a Norden bomb site that became famous in World War II. It's just a stunning location and a wonderful place to come in and see and enjoy the history of aerospace.
It was a real stroll down memory lane and history books because, you know, we all learned about the Wright brothers and their first flight. And to be able to see that historic aircraft is rather moving to think that we would not have air travel the way that we do now and that form of commerce that we have now had it not been for that flight and that plane. Same with Charles Lindbergh in the Spirit of St. Louis. It's rather moving. But, you know, if you are of a certain age, you remember gathering around television sets and watching some of the very first space flights that took place. And to see all that up close and personal is rather amazing as well. Are there some exhibits, artifacts that are the most popular there? There are the ones that you hear about most from visitors?
Well, in addition to the aircraft I just mentioned, we also have a flight-ready backup for the Lunar Excursion Module, which is the part of the Apollo spacecraft that the astronauts transferred from the command module into, and then this was during orbit around the moon, and they used that craft, the what we call the LIM, to then jet down and land on the surface of the moon. And we've just relocated this in the last couple of years to a more central location in the museum. And so it's very popular. It's a very stunning and odd-looking thing. It's covered with gold foil. It has these spindly legs that stick out, and, you know, you walk up right up to it, and you read about all the stories about how it was developed and how lightweight it had to be and how, of course, foolproof and redundant, triple redundancy, because once the astronauts went down to the moon, of course, they had to come back up and launch off the moon and then rendezvous again with their primary spacecraft to get back to Earth.
And that, so this is the spacecraft in which Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin went down to the surface of the moon for the first time 49 years ago this week, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, this is an example of that craft. Of course, the LIM, the LM that Armstrong and Aldrin went down to the moon on the first stage remained sitting on the moon. It's still there today. The ascent stage that took them back up to the command module for the return home, that ascent stage was then jettisoned from the once the astronauts had gone back into the command module.
So once they rejoined Michael Collins, yeah.
Right. And I'd add that one reason people come here to see these artifacts is they are the closest thing to the truth we can get right now. You know, we read things, we see video on TV, and a lot of that's interpreted. It's got the hand of a human being on it. But these artifacts are the original artifacts. You know, you can look up and look at the Spirit of St. Louis, and you know that Charles Lindbergh sat in that cockpit
right
for 33 hours and 30 minutes. He could see nothing ahead of him because in front was a large fuel tank that occupied the space he would normally have for a windshield. So he had to look out the side of the airplane. He had a small periscope to help with that. And that is the real McCoy right there. Nothing not original or authentic about it.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. We're going to be talking much more about some of the historic artifacts, but also some of the new projects and new things that are going on at the Air and Space Museum throughout the course of the program today. Russ, if people would like to get more information about the Air and Space Museum, take a look at your website, plan a visit to come and see the things themselves. What's the best way to do that?
Yes, sir. The website is National Air and Space Museum, and it's very in-depth and got lots of information when and where and how to visit. We also have another location that's open to the public, and that's out in Chantilly, Virginia, on the property of the Dulles International Airport, and I'd encourage visitors to consider going there as well. We have more than 120 aircraft on display there, including an SR-71 Blackbird spy plane, as well as the Space Shuttle Discovery, which, of course, made many trips into space. It's still got all the burn marks on it from reentry. And all that information is on the website. And
is that NationalAirAndSpaceMuseum.com?
Yes, sir. I believe it is.
Okay, very good. Russ Lee is the chair of the Aeronautics Department, the Air and Space Museum here in Washington, D.C. I appreciate you joining us. I wish we could have done face-to-face, but great information nonetheless. We'll take a quick break and update news next on WGN. So we've got an update of news, and then, Schwani, even though I'm not there to crack the whip today, we've got the far-flung forecast. Is that correct?
Not only do we have the far-flung forecast, it ties in magnificently, beautifully, wonderfully with where you are for the morning.
So it has to do with my hotel room?
No. The National Air and Space Museum.
Oh, very nice. It's not exactly where I am. That's where I was supposed to be.
Well, you're in the vicinity. You're closer to it than we are here. So
good enough for me. So let's get some news sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Here's Dave Schwan.
And marine units continue the search this morning for the missing boater who went overboard during the start of yesterday's race to Mackinac Island. The sailor has been identified as 53-year-old John Santorelli of Chicago, an experienced boater with at least 10 years of sailing experience on the Great Lakes. It is believed he was wearing a flotation device when he went overboard. Evidently, it did not inflate. A woman was fatally shot when a gunman ran into a busy Los Angeles supermarket where he held dozens hostage for about 3 hours yesterday before surrendering. No hostages were seriously injured, but before taking them, police say the man shot his grandmother and then wounded another woman. He then crashed into a pole after a chase at the Trader Joe's store in the city's Silver Lake section. Chicago police are looking for missing Special Olympics athlete Rezwanul Haque, who has autism and doesn't speak English. He's 22 years old, Asian, has black hair and brown eyes, about 5'8", weighing 160 pounds, last seen wearing a blue hat with the letters USA on the front. WGN Sports, Andy Mazur.
Let's get right to the things going on right now at the Open Championship in Scotland at Carnoustie. All the participants are on the course right now. Still a two-way tie for the lead, Xander Schauffele and Jordan Spieth. They are each at 9-under par, all even through three holes today. And Dean, you're probably wondering about Tiger Woods.
I was exactly wondering about Tiger Woods.
See, I heard you click on there. I knew you were going to talk about Tiger Woods. He is 1-under for the day. He is at 6-under par, three shots behind the leaders, and is all alone now in third place. Actually, I take that back. He's just dropped into a three-way tie for third with Francesco Molinari and also Kevin Chappell, each at 6-under par. The biggest move of the day, Eddie Pepperell, moving up from 36th position to the 7th spot. He shot the low round of the day so far at 67. But Schauffele and Spieth still
wondering. That's exactly what I was wondering. Hey. That and if they wear kilts.
Let's see. I'm looking at the TV screen right now. No kilts are visible to me of any of the players here.
Not really appropriate golf wear, I would
No, think. Especially with the conditions at Carnoustie today. It's nice. It's a sunny day, but the winds are kicking up 18 to 25.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't want to have to try to drive and hold your skirt down at the same time.
That would not be a very good
kilt.
Thing.
Your kilt.
I knew what you meant. So we'll keep you updated on this all morning long, and if there's any kilts.
That's at least for me when I'm wearing a kilt in golfing. I find it very difficult to.
It's very distracting.
Keep everything covered up and not scare people who might be trying to play through.
You know, because golf is a lot about the lower body, and you got to be very confident in how you feel on the lower part of your body.
Yep.
And with a kilt, you just can't. It's you just throw caution to the wind, so to speak.
That's not all that gets thrown to the wind.
Exactly right. Okay, we'll keep you updated on all of that coming up a little bit later on in the morning. Let's get to some baseball quickly.
And you know, Schwani, when you wear a kilt, often people don't wear anything under the kilt.
Correct.
That was my next question.
I believe they call
that
commando.
What do you wear under the kilt?
Yeah, I don't think. I think if you're if you're doing it right, you don't wear anything.
It's a free spirit.
That's why golfing. I would think would be difficult and.
Yeah, it's such a gentleman's sport, too. You know, if you just want to be able to be comfortable and, you know,
right,
having that lower body, like I said, taken care of.
All right, well, that's the fashion part of our program today.
Baseball, quickly. Last night, Dylan Covey did the job for the White Sox in a 5-0 win over the Mariners. He went a career-high 8 1/3 inning, allowing just 2 hits. Avi Garcia with a 3-run homer. I'll have the pregame today at 2:35. Ed and DJ, the first pitch at 3:10 here on WGN, the final game of the series against the Mariners. Cubs and Cardinals split their doubleheader yesterday. Cubs taking game one 7-2, losing the nightcap 6-3. Two teams will face off today in the finale of their 5-game series, Jose Quintana against Miles Michaelis at Wrigley Field later on today. On the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and Chicago White Sox baseball, no kilts either. Andy Mazur, WGN Sports.
WGN.
It would be fun if we did a show on Sunday morning.
All though, wearing kilts.
From the kayak. Yeah.
No, there's
when we
our
go kayaking.
There's
yeah.
our St. Patrick's Day attire.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
There's our St. Patrick's Day attire.
Okay. Done.
Okay.
Book it.
After, when I get back to Chicago, I'm going to stop at Kilts R Us and pick one up for each of us.
I wear an extra large.
Is that a backwards R on Kilts R Us, by the way?
No, of course it is. The okay. K is backwards.
Oh, okay.
That's where Jeffrey backwards. The Giraffe is working now. He got a job.
Nice.
Yeah, he's able to get a job.
Jeffrey the Giraffe wearing a kilt.
That's a visual.
WGN traffic, our expressways and tollways moving well. Downtown, we have the rock and roll half marathon going on all morning today. Numerous closures around downtown throughout the morning. Also, the Pitchfork Music Festival in Union Park going on from noon to 9 today.
Excuse me.
Room service.
Don't forget to leave a tip.
I'm pouring a little coffee. I didn't think it was going to be as noisy as this.
The Green Line and number 9 and number 20 buses stopping near the Pitchfork Music Festival in Union Park. And also closures between Belden and on Belden between Kenmore and Fremont for the Sheffield Garden Walk.
Yes.
Those closures are in place until 4 o'clock Monday morning. How's the coffee?
Delicious.
Wonderful.
How's yours?
It's good, too. I'm on about my sixth cup right now. So.
Oh, Schwanny. We're going to have to get you some Sanka.
Good to the last drop.
Do they still make Sanka?
I think they do.
They do. I saw it in a grocery store last fall.
Instant? It's like instant, right?
The instant coffee.
I took a picture of it, put it on Instagram, thinking, my God, no one's going to know what this is, and everybody knew.
Yep. There was another decaffeinated brew called Brim. Remember
that? Fill it to the rim.
Fill it to the rim
with Brim. Brim. But now everybody has decaffeinated coffee, so that's why I wondered if Sanka was still cranking.
Still has brand name recognition.
It does. It has great recognition. Unfortunately, I also remember it tasting like dishwater.
That's about right.
Yeah, so there's that, too.
This traffic report is sponsored by Sprint. Get the new Unlimited Plus from Sprint. Visit Sprint.com/unlimited or call 1-800-SPRINT-1 today. And for personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app. It's approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Beach hazard advisory continuing today along Lake Michigan. Clouds will move off. It will be partly sunny this afternoon. Highs in the 80s inland, cooler near the lake. Partly cloudy overnight, lows in the 60s. Sunny for tomorrow, highs 80s inland, 70s near the lake.
Excuse me.
At the tone, the time will be.
Pardon me.
O'Hare 69.
The noisiest room service I've ever had.
O'Hare.
Who would think steel cut oatmeal would be this noisy?
The steel is cutting the oatmeal.
Oh, okay. I didn't even think of that.
That's what it is.
It's the steel and the steel cut oatmeal.
Sounds like the gong show is going on over there. Oh, JP Morgan hit the gong.
69 at O'Hare, 70 at Midway. The lakefront has 69. And our far-flung forecast takes us out east. Actually, to Long Island, to Bethpage, Long Island.
Bethpage, Long Island. Beth I thought you Page, said it. I thought you said this had something to do with me being in Washington, D.C.
It does, my friend. It does.
Oh, so I have to keep listening?
You have, yes, unfortunately, you have to keep listening.
Okay.
Bethpage, Long Island, population about 16,000. It was founded well over 150, 200 years ago and has a train station.
Okay, great report. Thank you.
But the reason we bring up Bethpage, Long Island is that at one time it was the international world headquarters to a corporation that made a product that captured the attention of the world 49 years ago last Friday.
Uh-oh, wait a minute. I know where this is going.
You do?
Well, I know what 49 years ago Friday
49
was.
49 years ago Friday, Grumman Aircraft was headquartered in Bethpage, Long Island in 1969, and they were the company that made the Lunar Excursion Module for wow. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin.
Wow.
So Bethpage, Long Island, that company has since moved. It was bought up by, I think, Northrop Aviation or something like that. But from 1934 to the mid-90s, Grumman Aircraft was headquartered at Bethpage, Long Island, and they were the ones that made the Lunar Excursion Module.
What an interesting selection, you know, of all the places making aircraft. You'd think that Boeing or you know, the big names in aircraft making would have been involved in the making of that vehicle.
Right.
Or
right.
Being a spacecraft, whatever the correct name of it is. But
McDonnell Douglas was a big one back
right,
then.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But apparently Grumman got the contract. Well, not apparently. They did get the contract to make the Lunar Excursion Module. And that went up with, a number of Apollo flights, because keep in mind, they tested it before Neil and Buzz landed, and then there were several succeeding launches. And it was the Lunar Excursion Module that literally saved the lives of Jim Lovell, Fred Hayes, and Jack Swigert in Apollo 13. Because they had to stay in there when the command module went dead. So Lunar Excursion Module, Grumman, pretty important company.
How well do you remember watching that lunar landing? The Neil Armstrong,
vividly.
One small step for man, one vividly. Giant leap for mankind.
Vividly. Yes, absolutely. We were home that night. It was in
Same.
The evening.
Same.
And we were watching and listening intently, as was the rest of the world. It was incredible. We were over at a neighbor's house that afternoon. You may remember it was pretty hot that day, Dean, and we were at a neighbor's house when they landed, and then several hours later they went out and made the EVA, the extra vehicular activity, they call it. In other words, they walked on the moon.
But just watching that, Andy, do you even remember this?
I was two.
Okay, I'm going
Sorry
home.
About that. But
I'll repose my question. Do you remember?
I don't remember, no.
You're a smart kid. You're a smart two-year-old.
You know, my mom and dad have told me stories that we were at my grandma's house watching it, and I don't remember a whole lot of it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Because if you're of a certain age, everybody, that's a moment where everybody, probably everyone in the world, was focused on this, to see this historic moment, to see a man step out onto the moon, you know, someplace other than Earth, had never been done before. But that grainy transmission.
Very fuzzy black and white picture.
But you could very definitely make out Neil Armstrong stepping down those steps and, you know, making the first impressions on the moon and saying those historic words. And then Buzz Aldrin joining him shortly after that, watching the two frolicking around. Remember that?
Yeah, sure.
Like two schoolboys on a playground.
Yeah, yeah, dancing around up there. But,
yeah.
You know, with one-fifth the Earth's gravity, Neil Armstrong said later, it was fun bouncing around up there. You know, yeah. No effort involved.
It was amazing. It you know, I remember it so vividly. And planting the flag. You know, that was amazing.
Yep. And the plaque that was there, we came
right.
in peace for all mankind.
Right. I always felt bad for astronaut Michael Collins. He was the one that was left in the spacecraft.
Right.
He didn't get to go on the moon. because he had to, you know, keep things going in the home ship while the two were frolicking around. I wonder how they decided who was going to go.
Oh, who was going to get out first?
Who was going to go? Yeah. Who was going to stay?
Yeah. Well, that was probably decided a long time before the launch, because they had to practice and everything else. But Michael Collins had a very important job to do. He had to be there when they came back. I just recently read something about Collins that all the time they were on the moon, Neil and Buzz Aldrin, excuse me,
that Collins went through their stuff while they were out of the...
He was probably doing that, but he was terrified because if they couldn't recover from, you know, left off from the moon, there was no way to get them. So they would be left there to die, and he would have to come back himself. Mm. And he was scared to death that, you know, he would be, you know, just a marked man, right, who left the others on the moon to come back to Earth.
Of course.
He was terrified for that. But that came out much later. Everything sounded perfectly calm, cool, and collected when they were landing. So,
well, those guys just, you know, sounded so cool and collected while they're stepping on the moon. You know, I would have been like, whoa, look at me. I'm on the moon. I'm on the moon.
Do you think that Collins, when he went through all their stuff, discovered the very first, we went to the moon and all I got was this lousy T-shirt?
Inside NASA stories. Uh-huh. I'll ask that when I'm at the Space Museum later on.
Well, Bethpage, New York, where the LEM was born, cloudy and 73 today.
Very nice. We'll take a quick break and come back. How about your memories of July 20th, 1969? What were you doing when you were watching the moon landing with your family? My dad was completely blown away. You know, I think parents were especially completely blown away that this all was happening and, you know, wanted us to enjoy it and understand it. What was going on in your houses out there? 312-981-7200. We're going to go to your phone calls on this next on WGN. Hot, hot, beautiful Sunday. This is my beautiful day. Dean Richards, Sunday morning at 9:55. A couple of your quick memories about the moon landing. July 20th, 1969, and we are going to Dave in Brookfield. You're on WGN. Good morning.
Morning, yes. Back on that day, we had 50 scouts around a black and white TV with an antenna that went through the ceiling of the main cabin with metal coat hangers watching the landing. And then I was asking your producer what they all had in common, all those astronauts. I don't know if you know that little trivia thing. What do they all have in common?
I don't.
They were all Eagle Scouts.
Oh, that is right. I remember hearing that.
Yeah, so, you know, when somebody brings it up, like when you think back and we have all these people crowded in this, like, one room trying to watch a little tiny black and white TV way up in Rose, Wisconsin. So it was quite an adventure back then.
Yeah, how did the kids react to it all? Were they fascinated? I know that, you know, my schoolmates, I was in, 1969, I would have just started high school.
I was like 13 years old, so the majority of people there were probably 10 through maybe 15 years old, and then you had a couple of leaders. Well, I mean, we probably had 6 leaders for 50 kids, but...
Right. Yeah was, we were, I mean, we were just, you know, between the moon landing was, you know, the cherry on top of the sundae, because we had gone through John Glenn and Alan Shepard and all of these space projects where they would wheel TVs into the classroom so you could watch it all. So everybody was so into that back then.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And I still run into people now that were in our 60s. They're like, yeah, do you remember? I'm like, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a moment kind of hard to forget when, you know, you're watching something that is happening thousands of miles away in outer space. And, you know, it's a real... And now it's like a small black and white TV. My grandkids are like, oh, gee, you know, that's so ancient. I'm like, well, it doesn't seem ancient to me.
Well, you know, now with, you know, they have these high-power cameras and high-power transmissions and satellites, and where you get, like, perfect color pictures coming back from the planet Mars, You know,
well, they had thing with a camera that they had a camera that wouldn't work when they were trying to shoot photograph on the moon when they were doing it. And I guess the story later, NASA told them, just hit it with a wrench. Give it the American know-how, and they got the camera to work.
Oh, that's great. Just whack it with a wrench. Thank you for the... That's funny. That's I love that. Thank you for the call, Betty in St. John, Indiana. Hi, you're on WGN. What do you remember?
Good morning, Dean. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you.
I can remember I was a young married mother with little toddlers. They were in bed asleep. I'm on the sofa watching this. Couldn't believe what I was seeing. My husband's sleeping in his chair, and I'm yelling, wake up and watch. He wouldn't wake up for anything.
Wow.
But it was just amazing watching that. You couldn't believe it. It was one of those things in life that you still, to this day, and I'm in my 70s, thinking that was just a moment in time that is embossed on your brain.
Right.
And just then chills through your body when you watch it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My grandmother was still alive then. And
uh-huh.
I remember her. She wasn't at our house while we were watching this, but a day or two later, we were talking about it, and she watched it as well. And, you know, she said in her broken English, I can't believe the things that I've seen in my lifetime. And you think about that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the technology of, you know, especially my grandmother who saw telephones and automobiles and, you know, things like all the things that we so take for granted today.
Right.
She saw come, you know, into being in her lifetime. Uh-huh. It was amazing.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Oh, it was. It just sent chills through you. You were glued to it. You were just glued to that TV.
It was
just
amazing. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
Nice talking to you, Dean.
You too, Betty. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll take a quick break and update news next on WGN. Dean Richards live in Washington, D.C. this morning, where I'll be on the red carpet talking to Tom Cruise and the cast of his brand-new movie, Mission Impossible Fallout, which I saw last night, which is amazing. I'll tell you more about that. Plus, we will be talking with someone from the National Air and Space Museum, where the red carpet will be taking place tonight, coming up after a check of WGN News. Steve Cochran celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20. WGN Chicago smart speaker users say play WGN radio on TuneIn. Let's get the latest sponsored by Green Tea Services with Dave Schwann.
We have rain in 69 at O'Hare. Local marine units have begun the search this morning to find the missing boater who went overboard during the Chicago to Mackinac race, which began yesterday. He went overboard around 3 o'clock, 5 miles north of Navy Pier. More from WGN's Eric Rung.
The Coast Guard does tell us that the 53-year-old was likely wearing a self-inflating life preserver. However, it may not have inflated when he did go overboard. Other safety measures were taken when they did notice that he did go overboard.
Other racers were involved with the search just after it happened. Again, the searchers continuing to look for the missing 53-year-old who went overboard yesterday. Investigators from the National Transportation Safety Board have interviewed witnesses of Thursday's duck boat accident in Missouri. NTSB lead investigator Brian Young says they've retrieved the recorder from the sunken boat.
The real objective is going to be to find out what kind of information they had on board when they made the decision to go out. This was a squall that came up rather suddenly. There's a lot more for us to understand.
They've also collected video from another vessel that was near the boat when it sank during a sudden storm. Winds at that time were recorded at 73 miles an hour. An Afghan spokesman says there was a large explosion near the Kabul airport today, shortly after the country's controversial first vice president landed on his return trip. General Abdul Rashid Dostum and members of his entourage were unharmed, and the explosion it took place just after his convoy had left the airport. Governor Rauner has signed legislation to better protect state workers in vulnerable positions. The amendment to the Abused and Neglected Child Reporting Act now requires law enforcement to make all efforts to assist the Department of Children and Family Services when requested. And Chicago police are looking for four gunmen after seven people were shot, one fatally in East Garfield Park around 9 o'clock last night. They were sitting on a bench near Fulton and Albany. They're among two dozen shot in Chicago this weekend. Three of those have died. WGN Sports, Andy Mazur.
Well, it is getting interesting at Carnoustie in Scotland at the British Open. Tiger Woods now one shot off the lead. He is 2 under for the day, 7 under par for the tournament. Both Xander Schauffele and Jordan Spieth trouble on number five. They each bogey and are now at 8 under par each. Again, Tiger Woods now in the sand, though, on the par three eighth hole. Kevin Kisner also one shot back. He is at 7 under par, and we will certainly keep you updated on the events going on at the British Open. Last night was the Dylan Covey show for the White Sox. The pitcher flirting with a no-hitter into the sixth inning, giving the Sox a 5-0 win over the Mariners. Game three in the series is this afternoon. It's the rubber game of the series. I'll have your pregame at 2:35. Ed and DJ, the first pitch at 3:10 here on WGN. Cubs and Cards split their doubleheader yesterday. The Cubs taking game one, 7-2. Ben Zobrist was 4-for-4 in that game. Tyler Chatwood wins for the first time in nearly 2 months. In the nightcap, though, was all Cardinals, 6-3 the final there. Matt Carpenter is now homered in six straight games for St. Louis. Javi Baez ejected in the fifth inning. The Cubs lead in the Central is now 2.5 games over Milwaukee.
I had to listen to that from an entertainment journalist from St. Louis last night, talking about the thrashing that we took the other day.
Oh, and it was 18-5.
Yeah, and then the the wins yesterday as well.
Yeah, well,
I punched him. I had to punch him
square in the head, right?
Yep.
Hey, speaking of the Cubs and speaking of the lunar landing, Rick Pearson reminded me of a great Ron Santo story regarding the moon landing in July of 1969. The Cubs are playing game two of a doubleheader on the 20th of July in Philadelphia. Ron hits a home run, and as he's rounding the bases, the fans in Philly start standing and give him basically what he thinks is a standing ovation. As he gets to the dugout, he tells his teammates how appreciative he is of fans in Philadelphia understanding great baseball. And then, of course, his roommate Glenn Becker broke the news. Hey, Ronnie, look at the scoreboard. We just landed on the moon.
Well, thought it was for him.
He thought it was for him, but it was actually for the lunar landing.
I love that, Ronnie.
I can never hear any never hear enough good Ron Santo stories.
I agree.
I've got a few of those in my pocket, too.
I'll bet you have. Save those for your book, Andy.
I definitely will. On the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and White Sox baseball, Andy Mazur, WGN Sports.
WGN traffic. We have an accident in Lyle now on the north-south tollway to the exit to the I-88, the Reagan tollway. Once again, an accident in Lyle at I-355. Northbound near the exit to the Reagan Tollway, blocking the two right lanes. Downtown, the half marathon, the rock and roll half marathon, continuing. Numerous closures around the downtown area that will be continuing throughout the morning. We also have a situation in the West Loop area. The Maxwell Street Market has closed.
No.
Yes, indeed.
No.
Yes.
This has to be a first.
Well, I would think, you know, the rain or shine, and we're having, you know, rainy, cold, cloudy, dark morning here. But the Maxwell Street Market goes on. Des Plaines between Roosevelt and Harrison is closed until 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Even in the rain, you need your tube socks.
Especially in the rain, you need your tube socks.
And also, we have Ben Fest. I do not know what Ben Fest is.
I believe that's a festival that takes place in the St. Ben's area on the northwest side.
Okay,
like
roughly
Addison and Levitt.
Levitt between Irving Park and Byron, closed.
Wow,
today.
I know my streets.
Man, you do. You're good.
You'd think I was born here or something.
You know, gosh, that's right. Have you lived here all your life, Dean?
Seems odd, doesn't it?
For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app, approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. And the forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. The beach hazard advisory continuing. Possible rip currents along Lake Michigan today. Clouds will move off later, partly sunny this afternoon. Highs in the 80s inland, cooler near the lake. Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the 60s. Tomorrow, sunny, high 80s inland, once again cooler near the lake. O'Hare 69, Midway 70, and Chicago's lakefront 69. I'm Dave Schwann in the WGN Newsroom, ready to join the conversation whenever a story changes, right here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, live from Washington, D.C. this morning, overlooking the Jefferson Memorial from my window view right now. As we continue with the program, I'm going to be doing the red carpet at the National Air and Space Museum a little bit later on today with Tom Cruise and the rest of the cast of this new movie. We've got your Henry Cavill in this movie, Superman. We've got Angela Bassett in this movie. We've got Ving Rhames. We've got Simon Pegg. A real all-star cast. We'll be talking to all of them and then bringing you some of that on the WGN-TV morning news. Also live from D.C. First thing tomorrow morning. So, Shwani, we've been talking about this terrible accident that took place with the Mackinac race that went on. I want to bring in meteorologist Mike Hamernick right now as well, just to talk about, Mike, the conditions on the lake yesterday compared to the conditions that are going on this morning where the search is has resumed for the boater who fell off during the race?
Yeah, it's still not good, Dean. Waves are still up around 4 to 6 feet on the southwestern edge of Lake Michigan, so that would be the Illinois shores of Lake Michigan and even out of the middle of the lake. You know, we have a lot of buoys out there now that measure these wave heights in the summer and fall season. And, yeah, we're still getting waves similar to yesterday in that 4 to 6 foot range. They're a little bit lower further north in the lake in some spots, but the highest waves right now in the entire lake, unfortunately, are right over the southern end of Lake Michigan off Chicago. And it doesn't look like it's going to let up much today, unfortunately, Dean. It looks like these waves will remain high until later on tonight, until this pesky storm system, unusually strong for the month of July, finally moves east of Chicago tomorrow.
And, Shwani, just by way of comparison, for what you experienced when you were out on the water yesterday to what Mike just described, does it sound like pretty similar conditions?
Oh, very much so, yes. We had showers off and on, not hard rain, but most definitely the winds causing those 6 foot swells, maybe even higher in some places. There were some that were just really, you know, I can remember the stern of the boat going down and just looking at water a couple of times. So, yes, very high waves. Mike, if I may ask a question, is are boaters moving further north now? I saw where it was raining around Traverse City this morning. What are the conditions in general there as they move north toward the Manitous and the Mackinac Straits?
It's a little bit up there. It's certainly drier. There's no rain right now in the northern end of Lake Michigan, and just some clouds, and it's pretty windy up there, too, but not as windy it is as it is here on the southern end of the lake. But it's dry, mostly cloudy, and cool, as they are also being affected, the entire Midwest being impacted by this unusual storm for the month of July. You know, usually for the Mackinac race, the problem is the opposite. You usually don't have enough wind.
Sailors, I can attest to that.
I can't remember a Mackinac race in the last 10 or 15 years that's had winds out of the north or east like this. Sometimes you get a southwest wind, but to have this strong of a wind out of the north and east, very unusual for this time of the year.
Well, the conditions today will stay as you've described, because that's going to make the search effort obviously very difficult.
Yeah, it's not going to improve today, unfortunately. It won't rain all day. Right now we have a heavy shower over the city. It's really coming down in the city right now. It's dark, it's gloomy, but it's not going to last all day. There will be some dry stretches throughout the day. It'll be more of an off and on type of rain throughout the afternoon. I think more off and on once we get past 2 or 3 o'clock, but the rain threat is going to continue all day. And the winds and the waves, unfortunately, aren't going to let up either until later tonight and tomorrow as this slow-moving storm finally moves off to the east. And once it does, we'll see a big improvement in our weather.
So, Mike, you know, for you know, the rest of us trying to plan our work week, you know, today, tomorrow, and the rest of the week, what can you tell us?
Well, you know, we needed the rain, Dean, and we didn't get probably as much as we would like, so we still have a shot at rain today. But after today, the rain chance is shut off for the rest of the week. So great news if you took the week off and and we're going to do something outdoors. We have some beautiful weather headed our way. The storm will finally pull away tomorrow. The clouds will be on the decrease, and then some gorgeous sunny weather for the rest of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, with temperatures on Tuesday and Wednesday in the upper 80s and on Thursday and Friday in the lower 80s. So the timing just wasn't good as far as the storm is concerned. The rain on the weekends, as well as a lot of wind and cool temperatures. But and once you know it, come Monday, we're going to see things dramatically improve here in Chicago. Back to our normal, regularly scheduled summer once we get into Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, it was, as I was mentioning at the beginning of the show here in Washington, D.C., torrential rain all day long. It did not stop. Torrential rain yesterday here, and they're saying that it's going to come back. Right now it's just a little bit cloudy, but they're saying that it's going to be a super rainy week here in our nation's capital as well.
Yeah, absolutely, because of the system that's impacting us right now is going to team up with another disturbance that's riding up the Atlantic. This is just a very unusual pattern for July in that respect, and the entire East Coast is going to get hammered with heavy rains as these two storms combine. And that's going to be, result in a very slow-moving system that will bring heavy rains from Florida all the way to Maine. So, yeah, not a pleasant week on the East Coast. We are, and not much is going to be moving weather-wise. So once we get into the good weather on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, it's going to stick around for a while as that storm just spins off the East Coast, bringing heavy rains east. So if you're planning a trip out east, yeah, plan for a lot of rain this week, and I think that is also going to mess up some air travel. As the airports will be dealing with those showers and thunderstorms and the heavy rains there.
Well, that's not something I wanted to hear.
Are you out there all week?
No, I'm coming back tomorrow morning.
Oh,
so
okay.
Hopefully we'll be able to dodge a few raindrops and get out of here and get back to the decent weather in Chicago. Mike Hamernick, keeping an eye on our forecast. I'm sorry, Mike, go ahead.
I think Washington's okay until probably Monday night or Tuesday. So if you're out of there tomorrow, you should be in pretty good shape.
All right. That sounds good. Mike Hamernick with our latest. Thanks, Mike. Have a great day today. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come right back in WGN. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, live from Washington, D.C. at 10:20 now here in Washington, D.C. to interview Tom Cruise. Tonight for his brand new movie, Mission Impossible Fallout. We'll be doing the red carpet interviews for that at the National Air and Space Museum here in Washington. Throughout the program today, we're going to be talking with folks from the Air and Space Museum about this amazing, amazing establishment, places that you can come and visit when you come here to Washington, D.C. And joining us on the line right now is Emily Martin, who is a scientist in the Museum Center for Earth and Planetary Studies. Emily, good morning. Thank you for joining us on WGN.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little about what it is that you do with the Air and Planetary Studies there.
So I'm a geologist. I'm a planetary geologist, and I study mostly the moons of Jupiter and Saturn, so the moons of most of the gas giants. And they're really pretty cool because they're not made out of rock, which I think is interesting. And many of them have oceans on them. So I'm particularly interested in oceans on these tiny little ice cubes floating around the gas giants.
When you say they are not made of rock, what are they made of?
They're made out of water ice. So they're like giant ice cubes.
Giant ice cubes.
Floating around out in space. Yeah,
wow.
So they're pretty exciting places.
And how does this relate to what's on exhibit at the Air and Space Museum?
Sure. So some of the bodies that I study, they're around Jupiter, they're around Saturn, and we first saw these moons and found out how weird and wacky they were because of the Grand Tour, the Voyager missions. And so we actually have a full-scale Voyager spacecraft hanging in our Exploring the Planets gallery, which is a really cool spacecraft to see because there was actually two spacecraft launching in the 70s, and they went on this big wild adventure through the entire solar system. And some of them are still functioning today, kind of pinging back here to Earth. But right next to it is the New Horizons spacecraft, which is the spacecraft that flew by Pluto a few years ago, which gave us our first glimpse of the surface of Pluto. And if you've ever seen pictures of the surface of Pluto the last few years, you'll see that it's an incredibly dynamic place, and it was a huge surprise when we actually finally got to see those places. So For me in particular, it's really wonderful to get an opportunity to work in a museum where we get to have these spacecraft hanging around in our museum and getting to see these two spacecraft side by side in our exhibits, kind of representing some of the early phases of planetary exploration and some of the most recent phases of planetary exploration. It's a really cool contrast.
It must be very moving for you to see these spacecraft that were able to bring this data back, enabling you and your fellow geologists and scientists to further the work and our greater understanding of what's out there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as somebody who studies the outer solar system, it takes so much time and energy to get these missions put together. I mean, it took more than 25 years just to get NASA to put together the New Horizons mission and actually agree to launch it out to Pluto. It took another 10 years to get there. And so I'm sort of standing on the shoulders of all these people who came before me because I use a lot of archive data. I use a lot of data that came back from the Voyager missions. So those spacecraft were launched before I was born. So to be able to kind of get steeped into some of this history and kind of have a greater appreciation for these spacecraft, because, of course, I've never gotten to see them in person because they're flying well in the far reaches of our solar system. So it's pretty spectacular to be able to see this evolution of spacecraft and really get an appreciation of the history.
And as we've progressed in so many ways now with technology and we're able to do things so much more efficiently and quicker, is that also the case in the kind of work that you're doing, that some of these early projects, you know, must seem very archaic compared to the kinds of things that we're able to do today and technologies that we have today, where we're able to see and explore things?
Well, I don't know if I would call it archaic as much as it's really, I mean, the early days of space exploration, it was exploration, right? I mean, it was the very, very early stages of, you know, with the case of Mars, I think is a great example. I think when we flew by Mars for the first couple of times, everybody was really expecting to see something really spectacular with respect to, some people were just convinced that we were going to see life on the surface of Mars. And of course, that's not what we saw with the first few spacecraft, but the more we've continued to explore Mars, the more we've learned how dynamic and really special that place is. But what's really spectacular is the ability to continue to use the data that we collected really early on and be able to build upon those data sets. So the data that we have with what we might consider really archaic technologies now, that data is all still really relevant. So it's all really additive, all this data that we're collecting. And when I think about what we're able to accomplish, I mean, if you think about the Cassini mission, which went out to Saturn, you know, the camera that was on that Cassini mission was probably, in terms of megapixels, in terms of, you know, that camera, think about the kind of camera you had in your cell phone in the late 90s, right? Did you have, you know, if you even had a camera on your cell phone in the late 90s. And that's
exactly
the kind of technology.
Yeah, I guess that's what I meant by my question of the technology that we have now must be, you know, so far advanced from what was being used on the original missions. And I had no idea also that the Air and Space Museum, I thought it was just, you know, like a vehicular history that was being kept there. I did not know that, you know, the kind of work that you're doing, studying the planets existed, which adds a whole other realm to why you would want to visit a museum like this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I sometimes, you know, when I interact with people and they find out that I'm not a historian and that I'm a scientist and that I work at the Air and Space Museum, you know, a lot of people don't realize that when this museum was established, it was established with a scientific research department in addition to its historical research activities. And so I always love that part of our history because I always get that question, you know, what's the geology department doing at the Air and Space Museum?
Right.
And, you know, planetary geology is a really fundamental part of our history when it comes to early space exploration. A lot of the reconnaissance that they were doing on the moon was really in preparation for getting the Apollo astronauts to land on the moon. And so a lot of that story is really being told here and is really being preserved here.
What kind of projects are being done right now that we might see unfolding in the next years, decades, et cetera?
Here at the museum?
Sure.
So we actually have quite a few scientists in our department right now who are involved in the Europa Clipper mission. And as somebody who works in the outer solar system, the Europa Clipper mission is one that I'm really excited about. Europa is a moon of Jupiter. It has an incredibly young surface, geologically speaking. It's only about 100 million years old, which I know sounds really very
it's a baby.
Old, of course.
It's just
but
a baby.
In the grand scheme, it is just a baby. In the grand scheme of our solar system being, you know, 4.5 billion years old, 100 million years is quite young. So we've seen the surface of Europa from a variety of different spacecraft, most notably the Galileo spacecraft. But it's been such an interesting place with such a young surface, and we're pretty certain that there's an ocean underneath its icy shell. And so we're actually sending another spacecraft back to Europa specifically in order to go explore that ocean and understand more about that place to try and understand, you know, how habitable an ocean like that might actually be. And so we have several scientists in our department who are actively part of that mission. So that's something you'll see in the next few years.
Habitable. Habitable. So humans from Earth can go there and live, or habitable that there might be life there?
Habitable that there might be life there. And so the idea is to go back and actually get a sense of, you know, how thick the ocean is and what the ocean might be like and how it interacts with the surface, and try and determine whether or not it's an area where it's friendly enough that life might have been able to evolve there. The radiation environment there is really quite strong, so it would kind of like be living inside an X-ray machine or something over long term. It's not a very good place for humans thus far.
Yeah. Fascinating nonetheless, though. People want to get more information. Is there a website where people can go and learn more?
Yes, absolutely. The National Air and Space Museum's website is airandspace.edu.
Okay.
And we also have a podcast that we're working on called Airspace, so you can go and listen to that and hear about stories that you may not see illustrated here on the museum floor, and so you can go learn more about our museum through that.
Emily, really interesting. I'm so happy you could join us. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks so much.
It's Emily Martin, a geologist with the National Air and Space Museum Center for Earth and Planetary Studies. A quick break and we'll update news next on WGN. All right, coming up, we'll get into our Week in Theater segment. Today, telling you about how you can see free Shakespeare in the Parks around the Chicago area. It's all coming up after WGN News with Dave Schwann.
And the search resumes for 53-year-old John Santorelli, the sailor who went overboard during the start of the Mackinac race yesterday. Authorities have focused the search on 5 nautical miles north of Navy Pier, where Santorelli was believed to go in around 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Friends and colleagues say he was an experienced boater who had been involved in racing for 10 years or more. Police are trying to determine what prompted a man to shoot his grandmother, then run into a busy Los Angeles supermarket and hold dozens of people hostage for several hours. A woman was shot and killed when the gunman ran into a Trader Joe's supermarket. No hostages were seriously hurt before he handcuffed himself and surrendered to police. The grandmother hospitalized in critical condition. Around 40 Illinois Army National Guard soldiers based in Peoria are now back home from Afghanistan. They were in Afghanistan since last August. Some operated out of the Bagram airfield, others from the Kandahar airfield. WGN Sports, Andy Mazur.
The pursuit of the claret jug continuing today in the final round of the Open Championship in Scotland, and we have a two-way tie for the lead. Xander Schauffele and some guy named Tiger Woods, each at 7-under par for the tournament. Tiger, 2-under for the day. He made the turn after a par at hole number 9. He is on number 10 right now. And again, a one-shot lead now on Francesco Molinari and also on Jordan Spieth, who had a share of the lead opening up this fourth and final round. Eddie Pepperell is also now by himself in fourth place with a 5-under par score. He is in the clubhouse with a score of 67 today. So Tiger Woods, a one-shot lead now, actually, as Francesco Molinari and Jordan Spieth also bogeying holes. So it looks like Tiger Woods is now in a lead by himself at 7-under par through 9 holes today. keep you updated on that as obviously things continue out there in Scotland. The things continuing here for the White Sox as well after scuffling heading into the All-Star break. Dylan Covey starting the second half, pitching a gem for the Sox in a 5-0 win yesterday. Game 3 in the series will be this afternoon. I'll have your pregame at 2:35. Ed and DJ, the first pitch at 3:10 here on WGN. And the Cubs and Cardinals will wrap up their long 5-game series coming up today at Wrigley Field. Jose Quintana against Miles Michaelis. That is the pitching matchup scheduled this afternoon at Wrigley Field. On the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and Chicago White Sox baseball, Andy Mazur, WGN Sports.
WGN
very nice.
Traffic.
Very nice job.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Boy, you never say that about me.
Give me a chance.
It's early.
If you got to beg for it. I always tell you you do a nice job. What are you talking about?
You do. I'm just picking at you, like Andy Griffith used to say.
Yeah, easy for you to say with me all these thousand miles away.
I'm just picking at you.
I'm coming right to your house when I get back to town. You got some splaining to do.
WGN traffic on the Kennedy starting to build now. We're looking at some delays from O'Hare to downtown, a 32-minute drive from downtown out to O'Hare, about a half hour. And also some delays on the inbound Ike Wolf Road to downtown, a 25-minute trip. Downtown out to Wolf, not bad, 16 minutes. The earlier accidents we reported on the Bishop Ford and the Reagan Tollway have been cleared. And downtown, the closures for the 5K, or rather the 10K, the half marathon, are starting to wrap up. But still be advised, Columbus Drive from Balbo on north is closed as this race continues. They will gradually go away as the morning continues, but the downtown area for the 10K race is still rather congested.
Are you able to see the runners from our new...
We were...
vantage point?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we could look straight down on them from Columbus Drive because they headed north.
Are they out there right now?
No, they're done. They're done. They're making their way up and around and westward and then south all the way down to 31st in Michigan.
Oh, wow.
Was where the south end of this was.
Is that the finish line?
Might be the finish line. It might have been in downtown Grant Park.
The southern part of the route.
Yeah, southern part of the route. And then they come back up. But Columbus between Balbo and Monroe will be closed until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Aren't you glad you're in D.C.?
That's why I came here.
Just to avoid this.
Yeah, this whole Tom Cruise red carpet thing is...
They're not going to add... You just made that up.
No, it's going to happen, but it's secondary. The main reason that I go out of town is to avoid traffic backups like marathon Sunday mornings. Or half marathons in this case.
Well, can you guess who sponsored this traffic report?
You fooled me once. I'm not going there.
Now, see, I'm not going to guess because if we guess incorrectly, then we've made an advertiser mad at us.
Okay. Well, I'll
but
just...
But if I... No, I'm not going to guess.
You're not going to guess, Andy?
Does it start with an S?
Yes.
Does it end with an O?
Yes.
Go ahead, Dean. I'll let you take this one.
Soho?
Well, I'll just read the ad here.
Okay, the show's over at 1 o'clock.
Finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero.
Spot Hero.
Anytime you park. First-time users can enter the promo code SMART, S-M-A-R-T, for $10 off. Spot Hero. Park smarter. And for personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app. It's approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search T-R-A-F-F-I-X Chicago. And the forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Beach hazard advisory today along Lake Michigan. Rip currents are possible. Clouds will start to move off, and it will be partly sunny this afternoon. Highs in the 80s inland, cooler near the lake. Partly cloudy overnight, lows in the 60s. Sunny tomorrow, highs in the 80s inland, the 70s near the lake.
And in case anyone's wondering, it's raining here in Washington, D.C.
Is it raining as hard as it was yesterday?
Not as much as yesterday. It was torrential yesterday. The bald man's dream, a torrential rain. But I can see out the window now that it's raining again here.
What's going on at the Jefferson Memorial?
I don't know.
Well, he's inside. He's in the big dome there.
I can see the building.
Outside.
I can't see What do you think? What's supposed to be going on there? Jugglers? Mines?
Well, let's see. Visit, no, wait a minute. It's 11:40 in the morning there. I would have guessed that there are visitors there, yeah, people around.
Yeah, I see people, but I mean, they're being tourists.
And being inspired by Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
Can you
Thomas Jefferson dancers? What, I mean, what do you think is going to be happening out there?
What number president was he?
I believe he was number three, wasn't he?
You are correct.
Yeah.
You are correct.
Hey, I've listened to John Williams' show. I know. I know my Thomas Jefferson.
Well, our temperatures here are holding steady. 69 at O'Hare, 70 at Midway, 69 along the lakefront. I'm Dave Schwann in the WGN Radio Newsroom.
What was his wife's name? What was Thomas Jefferson's wife's name?
Mrs.
Thank you, Andy.
It was Wheezy. Oh, wait, that's George Jefferson. Sorry.
He was moving on up.
He was moving up.
Hey, Wheezy! Sorry, whole wrong Jefferson. Sorry.
And he was not a dry cleaner.
I'm Dave Schwann in the WGN Radio Newsroom. And all this is the stuff that matters on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
.42 and time for our weekly look at what's going on stage in Chicago, the Week in Theater segment. And this week we focus in on something that you can do for free. Who doesn't love that? It's the annual Chicago Shakespeare in the Parks tour that is headed out into the neighborhood parks. Barbara Gaines from the Chicago Shakespeare Theater is on the line with us this morning. Barbara, welcome back. It's been forever since we've said hello. How are you?
It has been forever. Dean, I'm great. It's wonderful to hear you, as always.
It's wonderful to have you on because, as you well know, the Chicago Shakespeare Theater is one of my favorite places. Right. The productions that you put on there are some of the most moving and creative and wonderful that we have here in the Chicago area. So,
thank you.
I'm always happy to talk about what's going on at the Shakespeare Theater, but in this case, I love that you're taking Shakespeare out of the theater and around the city so people can get.
Right. I have to say, with the thanks of Boeing and BMO and the parks. We are incredibly blessed to be supported. So the fun of this is we go to 18 parks on the west side and south side, one or two on the north side, and we bring culture and Shakespeare, and this year, hilarious Shakespeare, to people's neighborhoods. So everybody can, I mean, there are posters up all over in everybody's neighborhoods, and they can just grab a lawn chair or a blanket, come on with some food and drink, and watch this year, Midsummer Night's Dream, which is going to take, you're going to like this, I think, Dean. This production takes place in May of 2018 in Chicago. And it takes place over the weekend of the crosstown challenge between the Sox and the Cubs.
Oh, wow.
And we even get to hear some of the announcers calling some plays.
That's fantastic.
It is. It's really going to be fun. Many, many references to Chicago. Some of the scenes take place at on Buckingham, near Buckingham Fountain, Garfield's Park, Leon's Ribs. I mean, it's different locations with banners to tell you where in the world we are in Chicago. So it's there's a lot of laughs within it.
That's fantastic, and what a great way to introduce people to Shakespeare,
right,
who might not otherwise or feel intimidated by it. I talk to
right.
people all the time who tell me that they're a little hesitant to go see Shakespearean works because they think that it doesn't speak to them when really it really does, but they just need a good way like what you're doing to introduce them to this.
Well, I think that anybody who comes will start laughing so hard, believe me, they will start laughing so hard from the very beginning that they will forget it's Shakespeare. They will just forget it because there are so many songs in it, many contemporary songs that are sung by the actors, and many surprises that are just outrageously funny. Okay, I just said it, outrageously funny. And it's just a night to share with your family. And I know people will be happier once they see this than when they walked in. Because that's how I'm going to rehearsal every day, you know? You can read the newspapers, get depressed, and then you go into and see these wonderful actors performing this play. And I feel so good when I'm leaving.
What are the challenges, Barbara, of staging this around the city in different locations? I mean, if, you know, if something's at the Shakespeare Theater, it's a little easier for you to control, but you're in so many different places around the Chicago area for this.
That's a wise question. It really takes a team. It takes a big village of wonderful people at Chicago Shakespeare to pull this off. The first thing is we rent a truck every summer, and that truck contains the stage. And so the stage and this truck travel to all these parks, and we have this incredible crew, efficient, wonderful, quite frankly, adorable crew, and they put these they put the stage up in every park. And we're just hoping, one of the biggest challenges, really, is having the weather hold on us. And I just see this coming week, where we start our first four shows at Navy Pier, we begin there, that it looks like sunny, wonderful, perfect weather for this program. So that's, if you have any clout in the weather department, I would just, you know, please do us a favor.
Well, as you know, I have Tom Skilling's home phone number, and he not only predicts the weather, he actually creates it. So
nothing to worry about, nor do the neighborhoods of Chicago.
That's exactly right. I want to talk more about what's going on at Shakespeare Theater also, but
sure.
I just want people to understand, I mean, this is going to be everywhere around the Chicago area this summer.
It is. It's, you know, I can name a few parks. I mean, I can't name all of them. I don't want to take up all your time, but I mean, it starts out at Navy Pier, and then we go to, I think it's, we go to Gage Park, Ellis Park, Kelvin Park, Eckert, Wells, Columbus, Humboldt, Tully, I mean, Wilson Ridge, Garfield Park, and Loyola, and Peoria, and Calmette, and Ogden. I mean, I know I've left out a few, but it's a wonderful list. And you know, the joy of it for me is that I didn't know a lot of these parks, and they're jewels of Chicago landscape. And everyone has so much fun there. And now it's become a tradition. This is our seventh year. And the tradition continues in the parks because the mayor, once he saw this, I think he saw it the very first year, he has started his evenings in the park with all free entertainment at so many locations in different parks that really this city is now a model for spreading culture to the neighborhoods. And that's a wonderful thing to be so proud of.
Yeah,
it really is. Right.
Well, it is, and also it's world class entertainment. I mean, this is, you know, the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, and what they do and what Barbara does is considered by most to be among the finest Shakespeare theaters in the world, mm-hmm. not just Chicago, not just the downtown, in the world. So the fact that you're getting this coming to Chicago theaters, coming into your neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and that it's free. It is, you'd be crazy not to avail yourself of this. 18 different parks running July 25th through August the 26th. ChicagoShakes.org, I'm guessing. We could probably get more information.
ChicagoShakes.com.
.com. ChicagoShakes.com for more info. Let me take a break. We'll come back and talk more with Barbara Gaines, the founder and artistic director of Chicago Shakespeare Theater, next on WGN. Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, live from Washington, D.C., where a little bit later on today, we'll be on the red carpet and catch up with our pal Tom Cruise and also the cast of his brand new movie, Mission Impossible Fallout, which saw last night at the Air and Space Museum here in D.C. and loved it. Really fun movie. I'll tell you more about that coming up in the next half hour. In the meantime, Barbara Gaines, who is the founder and artistic director of the Chicago Shakespeare Theater down at Navy Pier, is on the line with us talking about their free Shakespeare in the Parks, A Midsummer Night's Dream. 18 parks starting July 25th and running through August 26th. You can get more info at chicagoshakes.com on that. But Barbara, I was interested in what else is in the theater right now. I know that you're getting rave reviews for this production of Peter Pan that's playing there this summer.
Oh my gosh, it's so wonderful. I mean, I just wish I could fly. I feel like I can fly when I'm in that room. It's absolutely a sensational cast. Peter Pan, I don't know, didn't we all fall in love with it when we were children?
Absolutely.
And this particular production, directed by Amber Mack, is so, so magical. And it's starring Johnny Shea, and he is a sensation. And we are so proud. You know what's the most wonderful thing for me? Hmm. Is to go into the lobby while we have our Peter Pan on, and you see about 30 strollers in the lobby all lined up. Because we have children of all ages loving it. And it's their first introduction to theater and live entertainment. And it is a magical love that is developed, that bond between a child and the theater that begins so early. And you just know that this is going to, that the theater and all culture will enrich their lives. It's forever. It's a very beautiful thing.
It is such a successful formula that you've had of doing non-Shakespearean productions during the summertime there where kids have more free time and parents can bring them to
That's
these
right.
shows. This has been very, very successful for the Shakespeare Theater through
the
years.
We'd like to, Dean, you're right. I think our diversity of programming is one of our greatest strengths, and that's thanks very much in part due to Chris Henderson, our executive director. I mean, we have, if you don't like Shakespeare, you can come to the kids' shows in the summer. We also have new classics, brand new works. We have musicals. We really have shows for every taste. And the most wonderful program, this Shakespeare in the Parks, it's so moving for all of us. It's one of the most touching programs because you see members of the family from infants in the park to, we once had a 113-year-old lady, by the way, who was mouthing Shakespeare.
Wow.
She knew every line of the play.
Wow.
And I mean, so it is something magical, almost sacred. And this year, totally hilarious. So all is well. All will be well in the parks.
Yeah. Now tell me about Nell Gwynn, which is making its North American premiere starting in September.
Yes, this was a real coup to get this show. This show was given the award, an Olivier Award in London as the best new comedy a couple of years ago. And it is the story. This is like a rags-to-riches story. This young, beautiful woman starts out selling oranges in theaters in the 1600s. Mind you, it was only written a couple of years ago, so it's totally normal language. She starts out selling oranges in the theater, kind of like at the ball games now. We're selling hot dogs, calling out in the middle of an inning, right? Get your hot dogs.
Sure. Yeah.
She was saying, get your oranges.
Much healthier, yeah.
Yeah, why not? And she, the actors would die today. But what she did was she started talking back to the actors as they were performing, and she was funny.
Oh, that's
really
great.
Funny. And they see this woman, and they say, wait a minute, come on up here. And lo and behold, they make her an actress. She becomes one of the most famous actresses in London. And who appears one night at one of her great performances? King Charles.
Wow.
With his spaniel, by the way, the King Charles Spaniel. They fall in love, literally. And it's the story of them and how this woman got to be such a famous lady.
That sounds fantastic.
It's a wonderful, heartwarming story with a lot of laughs and a magnificent cast.
That will debut on September the 20th and play through November 4th at their Shakespeare Theater's Courtyard Theater. Ticket information, more information on all of this is at chicagoshakes.com. More information on Shakespeare in the Parks Midsummer Night's Dream playing this summer. Same website. Mm-hmm. Barbara, it's always wonderful to talk to you. I appreciate you, that Dean. You could take some time this morning.
You know what? I'd make time for you anytime. Anytime, anywhere.
You are so sweet. I appreciate it.
Well, you're a jewel. You are a jewel.
Thank you. Hopefully we'll see you soon. Thank you very much, Barbara Gaines from the Shakespeare Theater. Quick break, and we'll update news next on WGN. And coming up in our next half hour, as we continue live from our nation's capital this morning, we'll talk more with some members of the National Air and Space Museum, where I will be on the red carpet tonight talking with Tom Cruise and the cast of his new movie, Mission Impossible Fallout. Any special questions you want me to ask Tom Cruise, Schwani?
How's his ankle?
That's a very good question, actually. Very, very good question.
And how long did it take before he was back in action after he shattered it? That sounds like a horrible injury, and it would take a long time to heal.
Do you know that he shattered his ankle while he was making this movie, doing, as we all do from time to time, running on the roofs of buildings and jumping from building to building.
Yeah.
Who, hasn't done that?
I do it every week.
Who hasn't done that?
Sure.
That's how I get to our new studio now.
I start tall buildings in a single bound.
I start over at the Aon Center, and I go to the roof. And I just run. I take a big leap and jump, and I get on the what is it? The Radisson Hotel.
Yeah,
that's right next door. I hop on that roof.
Radisson Blue.
And then I jump over to our building at 303 Wacker. That's what Tom Cruise does. There's a scene in this movie where he's running on the tops of buildings and jumping from building to building, and he likes to do his own stunts, and had a slight misstep, smashed his ankle while he was doing it, shattered his ankle. Oof. And he was out for quite a while that recovered.
Yeah, I would just think that would really mess up the shoot schedule of the movie.
It definitely did. Very, very definitely did. But he loves to do it. He is an adrenaline junkie that way.
Mm-hmm.
He loves to do that. So that will definitely be one of the things that we ask him about today.
Okay.
Andy, do you have any questions for Tom Cruise?
Yeah, I just wanted to know if he's still in contact with Rebecca De Mornay 35 years after Risky Business came out.
Look at you. Look at you with going back for the Risky Business.
Yeah.
And does he have any memories of riding an L car late at night?
The old L cars, too, with the white and green.
Hang on, I'm just thinking of that scene for a minute. I'm going to need a moment by myself for a little while.
Ask me if he's talked to Guido the Killer Pimp in a while.
Steve, talking about pimps, the Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. News is up next. Here's Dave Schwann.
Cloudy skies, temperatures holding at 69 at O'Hare, and searchers continue to look for 53-year-old John Santorelli, the sailor who went overboard around 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon during the start of the Mackinac boat race. Authorities focusing that search north of Navy Pier, about 5 nautical miles north of Navy Pier, where Santorelli went overboard from the stern of the boat, the back of the boat. Friends and colleagues say he was an experienced boater. He'd been involved in racing for 10 years, and it was his passion. As the 50th anniversary of the Special Olympics is celebrated in Chicago, police need help in finding one of the participants who is autistic and does not speak English. More from WGN's Roger Battish.
22-year-old Rizwan Ulhaki is missing from the Gold Coast. He's Asian, has black hair, brown eyes, about 5'8", 160 pounds. He was last seen in the 100 block of East Delaware Place, wearing a blue hat with the letters USA on the front, a blue polo shirt with Bangladesh in red on the back, white gym shoes and black pants. He has a light gray and red backpack. Roger Battish, WGN News.
An alleged gunman is in custody after a three-hour standoff at a Los Angeles supermarket yesterday. Dozens of shoppers and employees were held hostage after the suspect crashed into the market parking lot following a high-speed police chase. After negotiating, the suspect eventually surrendered. Alex Ray was a shopper when this standoff began.
Everyone kept their cool. We were just trying to stay as quiet as possible, while being able to find out kind of what was going on the outside.
One store employee was killed when the suspect exchanged gunfire with officers. Divers have recovered the recording device aboard the duck boat that sank in Table Rock Lake in Missouri Thursday, killing 17 people. As this investigation continues, former NTSB board chairman James Hall from the National Transportation Safety Board said those duck boats are not designed for commercial recreational use. He said the design makes them prone to the kind of accidents that led to the boat's sinking. Chicago police are looking for four gunmen after seven people were shot, one fatally, in East Garfield Park. This happening around 9 o'clock last night as the victims were on a bench near Fulton and Albany. They were among two dozen shot in Chicago this weekend. Three of those have died. And around 40 Illinois Army National Guard soldiers based in Peoria are back home from Afghanistan. They'd been there since August. WGN Sports, Andy Mazur.
It was the closest Tiger Woods had been to the lead in a major in 5 years. He started four shots back today at the Open Championship in Scotland. After nine holes today, he actually held the lead. Now Tiger one shot out of the lead after a double bogey at hole 11. He's also in trouble now on hole number 12. He is trailing the field again, as mentioned, by one shot. Francesco Molinari, Kevin Chappell, Kevin Kisner, and Jordan Spieth. That group now at 6 under par, one shot better than Tiger Woods at 5 under par at the current moment.
That hole number 11 is tough.
He really blew up over there. And I know you've played it several times, so you probably give me a better scouting report.
I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but 12, he's in a little bit of trouble. He was in the right fescue, and then across to the left fescue.
Fescue, right? Exactly what I was going
to
say.
That long, wispy grass that it's very difficult to get the club head through and get the ball to do anything you want it to do. You talk to any pro, you don't want to be in the fescue.
Fescue.
There's really no rescue from the fescue.
Are we allowed to say that? Can we say fescue on the air?
Oh, yeah.
That's a certain type of grass.
It's clean. It's legal.
It's legitimate.
Yeah.
It's not what we used to say in my neighborhood when I was growing up.
Okay. Well, that's a rough and tumble neighborhood you lived in then, huh?
Fescue.
Okay. Very good. Just keep in mind this. There's no rescue from the fescue. And Tiger found that out the hard way, unfortunately. But, again, still in there, and only one shot out of the lead. He is through 11 holes. And we'll keep you updated, of course.
All right, then.
White Sox baseball coming up a little later this afternoon, 2:35 for the pregame. I'll have that for you. 3:10 is the first pitch. White Sox and the Mariners finishing up their three-game series. This will be the rubber match after the White Sox win 5-0 yesterday. Ronaldo Lopez will go to the mound. The Cubs, that is, and the St. Louis Cardinals will wrap up their five-game series at Wrigley. Scheduled for a 1:20 this afternoon on the north side, it is going to be Jose Quintana against Miles Michaelis for the St. Louis Cardinals. On the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and Chicago White Sox baseball, Andy Mazur, WGN Sports.
WGN traffic delays on the Kennedy. It is a 35-minute trip from O'Hare to downtown, about a half hour from downtown out to O'Hare. On the Ryan inbound from the Bishop Ford to downtown, a 25-minute trip. On the Stevenson from Veterans Tollway to Lakeshore Drive, a little over half an hour. And on the Eisenhower, 25 minutes from Wolf Road to downtown. Downtown out to Wolf Road, not bad, 15 minutes. Closures from the half marathon that has been going on all morning downtown Chicago are starting to wrap up. But we still have some closures around Columbus Drive between Balboa and Monroe. That'll be closed until 3 o'clock this afternoon for that event as things get cleaned up.
You know what I like to do when I'm running half marathons?
What do you like to do?
I like running
fescue grass.
You can lurk in the fescue.
Yeah.
And spring out and scare people.
I can see you hiding in the fescue. Pulling the grass aside like Artie Johnson on Laughing, going, very interesting.
I like the fact that you completely ignore that I said that I run a half a marathon.
Uh-huh. I didn't ignore it. I just asked what you like to do when you weren't running it. Or running from building to building to get to work here.
I think what Dean means by running it is he's the in charge of the event.
That's right.
He runs the event.
Sits right. at the desk takes names.
I like to hand Gatorade to people running by me.
You know, they were setting up the water tables as I was driving in on Columbus today. I thought about maybe stopping over for a Gatorade on the way in.
Oh, that would be nice. Nice, refreshing.
What if they'd hand it to you out the car window?
Andy gets on the track with the runners.
I'm just running. Andy, keep the car rolling.
Andy gets a 78 Nova on the track with the...
What about my 72 Plymouth Duster?
What about it?
I saw the Seinfeld
episode
the other day.
It's got over half a million miles on it now. Thing runs
awesome.
Like a charm.
That's
Did
awesome.
You see the Seinfeld episode where Elaine and Jerry befriend a runner?
The runner, yeah.
And he's running in the New York Marathon, and Kramer is drinking scalding hot chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and
the runner thinks that it's Gatorade, and he takes it, and like all you hear is a scream off camera because he's got the hot, you know, the scalding hot chocolate.
Yeah, that was the one where they tried to make him not late for the race. So Jerry goes into a hotel room, doesn't like the attitude of the front desk person, doesn't trust it, and they take him home, and the AM PM thing, they make sure that it's set for AM, and then Kramer's hot tub blows the fuse.
That's right. Kramer setting up a hot tub in his apartment. Anyway, we were saying what?
What? Where?
We were saying, for personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app. It's approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. And by the way, I think Fescue is spelled FESQUE.
Very nice.
The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather
it's the
Center.
New spelling portion of our program. A new feature.
The Dean Richard Spelling Bee.
Spelling
There's
with
another
Dean.
Good contest for this show.
A new segment on the program, Spelling with Deans.
The beach.
Can you use fescue in a sentence, please?
I am lurking in the fescue while the runners run by.
There is no rescue from the fescue.
See? Catchy, isn't it?
Yep.
The beach hazard advisory continues today. Possible rip currents along Lake Michigan. Clouds starting to move off now, and it should be partly sunny this afternoon. High in the 80s inland, cooler near the lake. Partly cloudy to clear overnight, low in the upper 60s. And for tomorrow, sunny, high in the 80s inland, the 70s near the lake. You know what they say, don't you? The rain in Spain stays mainly
in displays.
O'Hare 69, Midway 70, Chicago's lakefront that has an abundance of fescue grass. 69 degrees. I'm Dave Schwann in the WGN Radio Newsroom.
Sorry for starting that. I really apologize.
And you know what? This is the stuff that matters on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Live from Washington, D.C. this morning. It's Dean Richards, Sunday morning. Somebody on our text line sent in a question wondering if I will be meeting with Donald Trump while I'm here in our nation's capital. No, the answer would
the
be
answer is
no. No, I will not. Is Dean aware that D.C. is a pants-required zone for broadcasting? It says it's brains that are optional in D.C.
I was waiting for the punchline.
I like
line.
That.
Let me see here. Let me see. Yeah, that's pretty much all the text I can read right now.
Is there grass out in front of the hotel?
Well, I'm not. I can't. There's plenty of grass in the distance here. D.C. is a very beautiful city, as you
it is.
Know, because you were both here. But, I mean, there's whoever planned the city, the way everything's laid out and beautiful park-like settings, it's really absolutely gorgeous.
It was a Frenchman, actually.
Was it?
Yeah, it was a French architect. He had a French last name that I do not recall, but I can check this out.
Isn't it like a wheel and spokes? Isn't that how it kind of lays out? With
It actually
around?
Is. Yeah. Yes, it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be here tonight at the National Air and Space Museum. They're having a big red carpet for the new Tom Cruise movie, Mission Impossible Fallout, which has a lot of aero vehicular events in the movie, not necessarily related to the museum itself, but there is a lot of air scenes, I guess you might say, in the movie. So I guess that's why they're holding it there. But we'll talk to Tom Cruise. We'll talk with the rest of the cast of the movie. This movie is really great. I was thinking about this last night after the movie. You know, there's so many so-called action movies out right now that feature superheroes. Everything is Marvel. You know, in DC Comics and Justice League and Avengers and, you know, like that. This Tom Cruise movie is truly an action movie. It's a guy who is, you know, with the Impossible Mission Force, and his mission, should he decide to accept it, in this case, is to locate three containers of a substance that would allow bad guys to set off nuclear bombs around the world, disrupting world order. So it's extremely exciting, and the action that goes on in this movie, the cinematography that goes on in this movie is really quite beautiful. And I saw it on an IMAX screen last night as well at the Air and Space Museum. So, you know, it's extra spectacular seeing it on that giant screen. A really, really well-done movie. I'm going to give it a very, very good review when it opens on Friday. But we'll bring you the interviews that we'll do today with Tom Cruise and the rest. We'll bring you that tomorrow on the WGN TV Morning News, if everything works out technically with that. Shwani, another texter is asking, is Dean meeting with Stormy Daniels today? No, I will not. I will not. I'm not meeting with anybody that's in the news.
No summit.
Today. There will be no summit or anything right. else.
I think you should return when Vladimir Putin shows up for the invitation back to D.C.
Yeah, I would do that. I would come back for Vladdy.
For Vlad.
Vlad.
For Vlad.
For Vlad, and in honor of him, I will dress the way that he likes to dress without my shirt on.
I have an answer to your question as to who laid out the plan for Washington, D.C.
Was it a Frenchman?
Yes, it was. Pierre Charles L'Enfant.
Oh, my.
Pierre Charles L'Enfant.
We couldn't find any Americans to design it?
No, apparently not. And during his basic plan, he required fescue grass to be laid around throughout the entire District of Columbia.
Again, was fescue grass, was that a requirement?
It's not.
Is that making grass great again?
That's where they got the amber ways of grain.
Did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Did not know that.
Which lead to the Purple Mountains Majesties.
No, I knew it was a Frenchman. Yeah. But
Now, is that right above the Fruited Plains?
I've heard that that's true, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember
it's
where the fruited plains were. Yeah. America?
Yeah. America.
God shed his grace
on thee.
Mm-hmm. And crown thy good
with brotherhood.
We got a brotherhood going here, yes.
From sea.
Hey, look, as I look out the window, I'm seeing
sea.
Sea to shining sea. I'm
from
able
fescue
to see.
Lawn to fescue lawn.
Wow.
Goodness gracious.
Oh, you really did it now.
I know. My apologies.
Andy has not fully learned the Shwani Pandora box that can sometimes
I will take a 10-minute timeout and rejoin you at 11:30.
We will take a break for all of our sakes and come back. We're going to talk more with some reps from the Air and Space Museum next on WGN. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN at 11:23. We continue this morning getting ready for our interviews. It'll take place tonight at the National Air and Space Museum here in Washington, D.C. And Valerie Neal is the chair of their Space History Department. Valerie, welcome to WGN. Nice to have you with us.
Well, good morning, Dean. It's nice to be with you.
So tell us a little bit about your department and your area of expertise at this amazing museum that we've been talking about all morning.
Well, our Space History Department has 13 historians who curate different areas of our collection. Of the 70,000 objects in the National Collection here at our museum, about 20 to 25,000 of those are objects related to space history. And each historian is a specialist in rocketry or satellites or human space flight or missiles. And I'm the fortunate one who happens to be the curator of the space shuttle era of human space flight. So space shuttle discovery is my pride and joy. We have it on display at our Udvar-Hazy Center near Dulles Airport. And we also have from the shuttle era a nice collection of Sally Ride's personal possessions. We have the manned maneuvering unit backpack that Bruce McCandless flew out away from the shuttle And there's this wonderful picture that's become iconic for the shuttle era of a single human being seemingly hanging in space alone over the horizon of Earth. And we have that backpack. And we have about 500 other objects from the space shuttle era in our collection.
People must really gather toward that because, you know, if you are of a certain age, the space shuttle years were the only thing that was going on for a little while.
You're exactly right, and that's certainly true of Generation X and beyond and millennials. That's the only spacecraft they know. So we find that we're in the odd position now of really having to tell the previous space stories in more detail than we had to before. This museum opened in 1976 when the Apollo era was very recent. And people knew about Mercury and Gemini Apollo flights, and they knew about the different capsules, and they knew about the missions to the moon. But younger people today, for all they know, the space shuttle is the only spacecraft we ever have, and it's the thing that went to the moon. So we have to correct some misconceptions and introduce whole new audiences to the prior era of space flight.
Everybody that I've talked to and I've told that I will be at the National Air and Space Museum doing these interviews tonight have just nothing but super high praise. This has to be one of the most attended places of all the historic places that are here in Washington, D.C., one of the most attended of them all.
Well, it is, and we're pleased about that, but we don't want to rest on those laurels. We want to keep earning people's interest and curiosity every single day. But we are in a friendly competition with the other Smithsonian museums, and there are some years when our attendance figures are fairly close, but usually we're in the lead by a million or so people. We have about 8 million people a year who come to our mall location, and another 1.5 to 2 million who come to the Udvar-Hazy Center. So we're usually brushing up against 10 million visitors a year, and supposedly the only museum in the world that gets that kind of visitation is the Louvre. So we're very pleased to be in that category of popularity.
I love that there's a competition between the other Smithsonian museums.
A friendly competition. Let me stress friendly.
Either way.
Of course, you know, we all want people to come here, and it really is a matter of pride to us that these museums are all free and open to anybody. We think of them as belonging to the American citizens because they are public institutions, but they really are open to citizens of the world. And so many people from abroad who come here are amazed that they can visit all of these museums on the mall and not pay any entry fee. That's almost unheard of in the world today.
There is such a tremendous feeling of pride also when you go to any of these museums, but when you go to the Air and Space Museum, I saw the movie at your IMAX theater there last night, walking around, what's it called, the Hall of Milestones, right when you
right,
come into
the Milestones of Flight Hall.
Yeah, which is amazing and has some instantly recognizable, instantly identifiable artifacts that are on display there. You have such a tremendous feeling of pride, as we did while these flights were going on back in the day, of being an American, that, you know, we're pioneers that way. You know, it took me back in remembering President Kennedy saying that we were going to go to the moon and beyond, and, you know, this very aggressive spirit that we've always had in the American space program.
I think you're exactly right, and Milestones of Flight is right at the center, right at the heart of our museum. It's the first gallery that people encounter when they enter from either side of the museum, and it basically is the history of flight in a nutshell. And the amazing thing is the history of flight is not much longer than that of a human lifetime. When you think about the fact that the Wright brothers took to the air in 1903 and then Americans landed on the moon in 1969, it's just an extraordinary achievement in the American areas of science and technology and public commitment to pushing the boundaries and trying to do great things. And that spirit of innovation continues today, of course. And we have in Milestones of Flight, our most recent addition there is Spaceship One, which won a $10 million prize in 2004 for being the first privately developed spacecraft to go into space and safely return with a human aboard. And it's the harbinger, we think, of space tourism. We're still on the cusp of space tourism, but Spaceship One first demonstrated that it was possible. And I think if that happens, we will add a new milestone of flight into that gallery because we want to stay current with new developments, new innovations, new kinds of aircraft and spacecraft that change life for all of us. When you think back, all of these aircraft and spacecraft have made discernible differences in our politics, our economies, our ways of conducting warfare, our ways of exploring, and our private lives even. Just being able to travel anywhere in the world pretty much at will was inconceivable 100 years or so ago.
Well, just the way that we watch television, something as mundane as watching television, not really very mundane because that's how most people get their information, but if it wasn't for satellites and, et cetera, the way that we communicate now on our telephones and so forth, all because of what went on in space. We're going to talk more again in a little while. Valerie Neal is the chair of the Space History Department, the National Air and Space Museum. Valerie, thank you, and I think we're going to catch up again later on. We're going to take a quick break, come back, update news, and we'll be right back on WGN. In our next half hour, we'll talk movies, the very unexpected box office numbers this week, and also Cher sings ABBA. That's coming up after a check of WGN News sponsored by Tom Peck Ford. Here's Dave Schwann.
And the search
is... I say, here's Dave Schwann.
I'm here.
Here's Dave Schwann.
And the search is resuming for 53-year-old John Santorelli, the sailor who went overboard during the start of the Mackinac race yesterday. Friends and colleagues say he was an experienced boater who had been involved in racing for 10 years and had a real passion for the sport. Authorities are focusing their search 5 nautical miles north of Navy Pier, where Mr. Santorelli went in around 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. President Trump is claiming newly released documents relating to the wiretapping of his one-time campaign advisor Carter Page, quote, confirm with little doubt that intelligence agencies misled the courts that approved the warrant. Lawmakers from both parties say the documents do not show wrongdoing. Documents were part of the official's application for a warrant to the secretive Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. Chicago police looking for 4 gunmen after 7 people were shot last night, one fatally in East Garfield Park. This happening around 9 o'clock as the victims were sitting on a bench near Fulton and Albany. WGN Sports, Andy Mazur.
The fickle game of golf. Tiger Woods experiencing the highs and lows of the final round at the British Open. He started 4 down. He was up by 1. Now he's falling down the leaderboard after a double bogey at 11. He sits right now at 4 under par, which is 2 shots off the lead. Tiger Woods playing hole number 13 right now. There is a 5-way tie for the top spot right now. Each of these players at 6 under par, Rory McIlroy, Francesco Molinari, Kevin Chappell, Xander Schauffele, and Jordan Spieth. They are all at 6 under par and on the back 9 at this particular point in the British Open, trying to get the claret jug. Jordan Spieth trying to become the first back-to-back winner at the British Open in 10 years. So again, Tiger Woods now 4 shots under par. He is 1 over for the day and 2 shots off the pace so far at the British Open. We'll keep you updated all afternoon long right here. We have White Sox baseball coming up for you as well. White Sox and the Mariners will wrap up their three-game series, all even at one after a White Sox 5-0 win yesterday behind Dylan Covey. 2:35 for your pregame. I'll have that for you. 3:10 is your first pitch with Ed and DJ from Seattle. It'll be Reynaldo Lopez going up against Marco Gonzalez. Cubs and the Cardinals are set to go at Wrigley Field. 1:20 start on the north side. It'll be Jose Quintana going against Miles Michaelis as the teams wrap up this long, extended five-game series. On the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and Chicago White Sox baseball, Andy Mazur, WGN Sports.
WGN traffic delays on the Kennedy now, starting from O'Hare to downtown, about a 40-minute trip from the airport on in. Downtown to O'Hare, a little over half hour. On the Eisenhower, a half-hour trip from Wolf to downtown. Outbound downtown to Wolf, not bad, about a 20-minute trip. On the Dan Ryan inbound, a 20-minute drive from the Bishop Ford to downtown. And also on the Stevenson, we're looking at 41 minutes from Veterans Tollway to Lakeshore Drive. Closures wrapping up downtown from the half marathon, the rock and roll half marathon that took place earlier this morning. And don't forget the Pitchfork Festival continuing now in Union Park. That area will be pretty crowded, really, from noon to 9 o'clock tonight. It's day three of the festival. The Green Line and buses numbers 9 and 20 will stop near the festival.
You love hanging out at the Pitchfork Festival, don't you?
I've never been there.
It's kind of an alternative rock.
Alternative festival. Rock and roll thing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, when I found out that the Crying Shames and the Turtles weren't going to be there, then I just decided, no, this isn't for me.
Yeah, it's not for you.
No, not for me.
No. Might not even be for me.
1910 Fruit Gum Company.
They weren't coming either. Neither was the Ohio Express. What am I going to do?
I would love, like the Pitchfork Festival, that's, you know, it's a mostly millennial kind of festival and, you know, groups for millennials. Or Lollapalooza, even, for example. Mm-hmm. I would love, like, on one of the main stages, that, like, the Archies get up there and sing,
sing
Yummy,
sugar,
Yummy,
sugar.
Yummy, or Sugar, yummy, Sugar, yummy, or something, yummy. And just to see what the millennials would do.
You know what? They'd probably be singing it out loud as they left.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Some of the 20-somethings I know all the words to Beatles songs, and they love that era. They all do.
Well, Beatles songs are a far cry from Yummy, Yummy, Yummy. I
well,
got
they may
love
know
in my
that
tummy.
Too. They may know that too.
Play sugar, a little disco duck
honey,
for
them. Honey,
you are my candy girl.
There, that's when a song was a song.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then you could always go to Disco Duck if all else fails.
Oh no, jeez! I had to play that.
That's when a song was a song.
Yep. When a DJ could write a top 40 song and it goes to number one.
I remember I paid a nickel to get on the streetcar. Went to see Rick Dees.
Walked up to school uphill both ways.
With a hole in my shoe.
All right. The Old Man Show will continue after this. What's next?
Well, The Old Man Show is sponsored by traffic, also by the USAA Life Insurance Company.
Oh, that's kind of perfect.
Today is the day. Today is the day to get USAA life insurance, provided by USAA Life Insurance Company, San Antonio, Texas, subject to state availability, issue limitations and contract terms and conditions. Visit USAA.com. And for personalized traffic on demand, you can get the Traffic Chicago app. It's approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Beach hazard advisory continuing today along Lake Michigan. Clouds moving away, partly sunny this afternoon. Highs in the 80s inland, cooler near the lake. Partly.
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, sorry. They were talking in my ear.
Oh.
Turn my microphone off so I can yell at Tom.
Partly cloudy to clear.
Am I off? Am I off?
No.
Lows in the upper 60s.
Oh, Tom. Uncle Dean would like to speak with you privately.
Abundant sunshine among the
fescue
grass tomorrow.
Am I on now?
No,
is anybody in the control room?
No, you're not on. Keep going. Keep
if
talking.
You guys in the control room are listening, I want you to pull up a song by the 1910 Fruit Gum Company.
They went to have breakfast, apparently.
I guess they did, just to satisfy.
Are you guys?
Can you
am
name
I still
me
on
one of
no?
the big one of the big hit songs by the 1910 Fruit Gum Company? Called The Train. The train is coming down the track. It's a bringing my baby back. Abundant sunshine for tomorrow. High is 80s in the inland areas where the fescue grows and 70s near the lake. Right now, temperatures holding still 69 O'Hare, 70 at Midway, 69 along the lake. I'm Dave Schwann.
We had a conversation while you were talking.
I'll bet you, yeah, anybody's guess as to what the conversation
was
about.
There's no rescue for us from the fescue, apparently.
I'm Dave Schwann in the WGN Radio Newsroom, and this is the stuff that matters on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Who knew that a form of grass was going to be our number one topic on the show today?
I know. It's amazing. It's organic.
So talking about the Pitchfork Festival, and I said it was an alternative music, alternative rock festival. How wrong I am! Normally, it has always been an alternative rock band, but you know who's performing there today? Even Schwanny knows this. Chaka Khan.
Oh, really?
Yes, Chaka Khan.
Chaka Khan. She's appearing there today, and Lauryn Hill. Certainly not an alternative rocker
from the Fugees.
Yep. Who else is appearing there today? Well, there are some bands that I'm unfamiliar with, like the Japan Androids. Japan Androids.
Why were you playing Stevie Wonder?
Japanese. I'm here in Washington. I'm not playing anything. I don't know why.
They're talking
music.
In my ear now.
I don't know why the music choices are happening as they are today. I'm many miles away from home. A band called Japanese Breakfast is playing there today.
Okay.
Never heard of them.
Irreversible Entanglements.
Sounds like a serious issue.
Appearing there today.
Is Petula Clark going to be there?
Okay. Oh, all right. We've already gone down that path. We've already established you're 100 years old.
What's wrong,
Andy? Thank you very much.
Oh, I just almost fell over. Sorry.
All right. So, the weekend movies. This was an interesting week because we had two sequels opening this week, which is unusual. Equalizer 2, the Denzel Washington movie. And, by the way, Denzel Washington's first sequel ever turned out to be the number one movie at the box office. All weekend long, Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, the sequel to the first Mamma Mia movie, was leading the box office. And then the Denzel Washington movie had a surge last night and slightly overtook Mamma Mia. So Equalizer 2, $35.8 million. Mamma Mia 2, $34.4 million. And after that, it was Hotel Transylvania, Summer Vacation. Ant-Man and the Wasp came in at number 4. And Incredibles 2 came in the number 5 spot for the weekend, which is interesting because Dwayne The Rock Johnson's movie, Skyscraper, is tanking big time, not even showing up in the top 5. And everybody thought that that was going to be one of the biggest movies of the summertime, but not the case. Very interestingly, that Denzel's movie, not a surprise because I really liked it, came in number 1, but this Mamma Mia 2 is going to be one of the big success stories of the year, debuting so well. It's been so well reviewed. Even I gave it a good review. And, you know, if you've listened to the show, you know that I hated the first Mamma Mia movie. I just couldn't stand it. Some of you liked it. I'm glad you did. It just wasn't for me. But the second Mamma Mia movie is fun, I think, much more balanced in its story. The performances are better. It's a story that flashes back and forth 30 years ago with when you learn how everything came to be in that first movie. So it's a prequel, but it's also a sequel because now it takes you to that same Greek island. While you're learning how everything came to be, it flashes back to present time, where you see what's going on there now, and you see many of the original cast members back in the movie again, Colin Firth, Stellan Skarsgård, and Pierce Brosnan, Stellan Skarsgård, and Colin Firth are back. Christine Baranski, Julia Waters is back in the movie again. They're making it sound like Meryl Streep is, you know, starring in this movie because they've got her name, you know, in big letters under the movie, and she's barely in the movie. She literally is in one scene toward the end of this movie. So don't go in thinking you're going to see a lot of Meryl Streep in this movie. Amanda Seyfried, who played her daughter in the first movie, is back, and she's sort of the principal character in the film now. But it's really well done, and thankfully they got people who can actually sing to sing songs in this movie, ABBA songs, many more lesser-known ABBA songs than in the first Mamma Mia, but still very nice and very, very well done. And, man, would I ever be remiss if I didn't mention Cher in this movie. Cher, from the movies, from television, from the pop charts on, you know, on Billboard, one of the greatest performers ever, Academy Award winner, Grammy Award winner. She plays the grandmother to Sophie, the now married daughter in this film. And Cher is also not in the movie a lot. She's in sort of the ending scenes of the movie. She's in a few more scenes than Meryl Streep. But there is a moment in this film where Cher sings the old ABBA song Fernando along with Andy Garcia. And this version that we have for you actually features the cast of the movie also singing Fernando. This is Cher. Give this a listen.
So now for Fernando, every hour, every minute seemed to last eternally. I was so afraid for Fernando. We were young and full of life, and none of us prepared to die. And I'm not ashamed to say the roar of guns and cannons almost made me cry.
I like Cher's version of Fernando. You know, she 73, I believe, 72, 73 years old, and still can belt him out with the best. She sounds so great. Cher, by the way, is going to be coming out with a full album covering ABBA songs based on the success of this, and it certainly looks like the movie's going to do very well. In September is when they're saying the Cher ABBA album will be coming out, so we'll all look forward to that. But if you're, you know, in these days where movies can be, you know, R-rated, kind of depressing, kind of weird, here comes a movie that is just, it's fun. It you know, it's fun and it's entertaining. You want, you know, a couple of hours. Actually, I think it's about an hour and 40 minutes, something like that. It's not even 2 hours. You want to just go in and turn your mind off for a little while and sing along with the ABBA songs and have a little bit of fun. I am highly recommending this movie. As much as I disliked the first one, I have to say I had a great time watching the second one. Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again is the name of it. I also like the Denzel Washington movie, too. It's very violent, I will say that. But if you want just a good straightaway action movie, the Denzel Washington movie is one that I'll recommend to you. The next weekend, we're going to be talking and reviewing the Tom Cruise film, Mission Impossible Fallout, which I saw last night at the Air and Space Museum's IMAX Theater. Today, I'll interview Tom Cruise and the cast of that movie and bring that to you on television tomorrow morning, and we'll bring you the full interviews next week. But I'm going to give a very good review to the new Tom Cruise movie as well. I know some people just don't like Tom Cruise. They don't like him personally. They don't like much of what he has said and done. And, you know, people are certainly free to like whoever they like and, you know, and don't like whoever they don't like. These Mission Impossible movies are spectacularly put together. They are tremendously exciting, visually, story-wise. And say whatever you want about Tom Cruise. He's a hell of an actor. He really is. I mean, he's a great actor, but he is a daredevil actor. He's unafraid to do most of the stunts that he does in this movie, despite the fact that he injured himself, actually, doing many of them himself. It is tremendously exciting, this Mission Impossible Fallout. Pretty sure I'm going to give it a Dean's List A. I'm going to think about it a little more, but I really had a good time watching this movie last night. All right, a quick break, and we'll update news. We're getting ready for a little food time show for you next on WGN. Coming up, we'll have more from the National Air and Space Museum, where I'll be doing my interviews later on tonight with the cast of Mission Impossible Fallout, including one Mr. T. Cruise. That's coming up later on. And Shawnee, Andy, both of you, happy hot National Hot Dog Month.
Hey, and a happy National Hot Dog Month to you, too.
I went to the Hallmark store to try to find a card. Turns out they didn't have National Hot Dog Month cards. But I send you my sincere personal greetings for the nicest Vienna beef holiday possible.
Mm, poppy seed bun.
It's good eating right there.
Oh, yeah.
And what comes to mind as your favorite hot dog place ever?
Well, that's what we're going to get into in the next half hour, Shawnee. I couldn't have written that tease for you better myself. Yeah,
I just teased the next half hour of the show.
Yeah, for a change, you actually read my mind on something. So that's coming up on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users say play WGN radio on TuneIn. And that's where you can hear Steve Cochran celebrating the most valuable person on the planet every weekday morning at 7:20. But first, the check of WGN News. Here's Dave Schwann.
Cloudy skies and 69 at O'Hare. The search continues for 53-year-old John Santarelli, the sailor who went overboard yesterday during the start of the Chicago Mackinac race. This happening about 3 o'clock, 5 nautical miles away from Navy Pier. They were headed north-northeast from Navy Pier. Nick Berberian, rear commodore of the Chicago Yacht Club, says Santarelli's passion was boating.
John was a highly respected, highly active, highly enthusiastic, and highly passionate member of that sailing community. Those that participate in that community share an enormous passion. and this loss is felt by all of them.
Just after Mr. Santarelli went overboard, crew members and boaters close by attempted a rescue. New procedures are being instituted at Chicago beaches. Flags indicating swimming conditions at beaches along the lake have always been used 24 hours a day. Not in Chicago, though. That's changing. Lifeguards on duty at Chicago beaches are there from 11 to 7. When lifeguards leave, red warning flags will be posted warning people not to swim. But the new rules following the drowning earlier this month of a 13-year-old girl just 30 minutes after lifeguards had ended their shift at Loyola Beach. Police are trying to determine what prompted a man to shoot his grandmother, then run into a Los Angeles supermarket and hold dozens hostage for hours. A woman was shot and killed when the gunman ran into a Trader Joe's in Los Angeles. No hostages seriously hurt. The grandmother hospitalized this morning and is in critical condition. Wildfires in Northern California are forcing mandatory evacuations near Yosemite. So far, no homes have been damaged. Cal Fire Captain Christian Lineman says the fire is burning in steep and terrain that is hard to reach.
We also have crews on the ground, fire crews in fire engines, putting water down on it. They are utilizing all the tools that they have to try to create breaks and create a buffer zone and to stop that fire spread from getting into the park.
Over 2,900 firefighters are working in triple digit temperatures and unpredictable winds to fight this fire. Officials at the two amphibious vehicle tour operators in the Wisconsin Dells say they have no plans to change the way they are operating, this after the tragedy on Table Rock Lake in Missouri that killed 17 people last Thursday. The operators say the vessels around the Wisconsin Dells don't get more than 100 feet from shore and can return to land in about a minute. They say the tours are postponed at the Dells if bad weather is forecast. And about 40 Illinois National Guard soldiers based in Peoria are back from their tour of duty in Afghanistan. They were there at two airfields, the Bagram Airfield and also the Kandahar Airfield. WGN Sports, Andy Mazur.
Well, it's a scramble to find out who's going to be the champion golfer of the year at the 147th Open Championship in Carnoustie. That's in Scotland. There are eight golfers within two shots of the lead right now. Francesco Molinari and Xander Schauffele own that lead at 7 under par. Then there's a group that is one shot back, including Justin Rose and Rory McIlroy. And then there's Tiger Woods' group. He is two shots back at 5 under par. He is playing hole number 17 right now. And in the case of Jordan Spieth being one shot back, he's trying to become the first back-to-back champion at the British Open in the last decade. So it's all coming down to the wire. Some guys here trying to get back into it, running out of holes, though, and that is a problem, obviously. But we'll update you as soon as we get a champion golfer of the year at Carnoustie in Scotland. White Sox baseball is coming your way this afternoon. I'll have your pregame at 2:35 today. Ed and DJ, the first pitch at 3:10 of the White Sox and the Mariners. It's the final game of the three-game series. The series even at one apiece after Dylan Covey had a great outing last night, 8 1/3 innings of two-hit baseball in shutting out the Mariners 5-0. Today it's Reynaldo Lopez going to the mound against Marco Gonzalez. Cubs and the Cardinals trying to wrap things up at Wrigley Field today. 120, weather permitting, on the north side. It'll be Jose Quintana against Miles Michaelis, the end of their five-game series. On the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and Chicago White Sox baseball, Andy Mazur, WGN Sports.
WGN traffic, delays on the Kennedy continue. It is now a 45-minute trip from O'Hare into downtown. Downtown out to O'Hare, a 36-minute trip. On the Stevenson inbound, Veterans Tollway to Lakeshore Drive, 35 minutes. Outbound to the tollway, about a half hour from Lakeshore Drive to the tollway on the Stevenson. The Eisenhower from Wolf to downtown, 30 minutes. And on the inbound Dan Ryan, we are looking at a pretty good trip now, 20 minutes from Bishop Ford to downtown. Watch for an accident that in Rosemont at the Jane Addams tollway inbound at Illinois 72 Higgins Road. And the closures wrapping up downtown from the 10K, the Rock and Roll Marathon, half marathon this morning. But Columbus Drive between Balbo and Monroe will remain closed until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Do I hear a cup of coffee being poured in the background there?
No, I was rattling something, but would you like something? Can I pour you something?
Sounded like waffles.
There's not really anything left.
Yeah.
Room service was here a long, long time ago.
You have any Sanka?
I drank the Sanka.
You drank
already.
The Sanka? How about Brim? Can you fill it to the rim with Brim?
Oh, I'll fill it to the rim with Brim, all right. I don't even know what that means.
For personalized.
I have no idea what that
You don't means. Remember the tagline for Brim decaffeinated coffee.
Now that you mention it, I think I'll enjoy it.
Fill it to the rim with Brim. Andy remembered that.
I did remember that, yeah.
For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app and a cup of coffee approved by the mortgage expert.
On my part,
that was beautiful.
Really good. Clean.
That was beautiful. The Traffic Chicago app approved by, you know who used to do the Sanka commercials? Robert Young. So now you're just sipping the coffee just like Robert Young used to. Hello?
Okay.
Okay.
For those of you under 80 years old who would like to know who Robert Young is.
For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app. It's approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. And the forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. A beach hazard advisory continues today. Possible rip currents along Lake Michigan. Clouds moving off, becoming partly sunny this afternoon. High in the 80s inland, cooler near the lake. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the 60s. And for tomorrow, abundant sunshine, according to Tom Skilling. Highs 80s inland, 70s near the lake. We're up to 71 now at O'Hare, also 71 at Midway, and 70 along the lake shore. I am Marcus Welby, MD, in the WGN
Colombian, rich Colombian coffee.
Buenos dias.
Ready to join the conversation live and enjoy a cup of coffee on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I shouldn't encourage you to go into the past because you'll get stuck there. But what was that commercial? There was a coffee commercial with some guy who was it like riding a donkey?
Yeah, it was Juan Valdez.
Juan Valdez.
Yeah. I'm Juan Valdez. What was that for? What was the product?
I'm trying to remember. I think it might have been Maxwell House.
Hello.
Either Maxwell House or Hills Brothers Coffee.
Let me see. Hang on a second here.
It wasn't Folgers. That was Mrs. Olson.
On the old internet here.
Let's see who finds it.
What's
first.
An internet?
Valdez. Dad, who's Robert Young? let me see here. Juan Valdez is a fictitional. Sorry, I'm all caffeined up. It was a fictitious character who appeared in advertisements for the National Federation of Coffee Growers of Colombia. Oh, so he was a real person. Who knew? Let me see here. Juan Valdez was initially portrayed by Jose Duval in print advertisements and on television. It was just a coffee federation.
Huh, interesting.
It was not a specific brand of coffee.
Oh, it wasn't a specific brand. Okay. Talking about the finest Colombian beans.
Well, because he worked for the National Federation of Coffee Growers of Colombia.
Okay. Well, that explains that then.
That's why. Now explain who Robert Young is.
Well, Robert Young was an actor who did movies and TV.
Tell us, Grandpa.
Well, once upon
What's
a time.
TV?
Gather around
once,
the radio,
once
young
upon
cares.
A time, there
What's
was
TV?
A show.
Is that like Netflix?
Well, I would imagine you could get some episodes on Netflix. There was a show called Father Knows Best.
What's a father?
And he had two children, two girls and a boy.
Yep.
And almost every episode, he would come in the kitchen door and the wife would say, "How was your day today?" And he'd say, "Why, it was just fine." So Father Knows Best.
That sounds like a great show.
Then he was a doctor. He was Marcus Welby, who did house calls.
Okay.
And somewhere in between, he was the person that did the Sanka commercials, the Sanka coffee commercials.
Okay. All right.
I do not know who was in the Brim commercials.
Neither do I.
And I'm not looking it up.
That's the Now You Know department of our program today.
I thought we were going to talk about hot dogs.
Well, we are going to. We're going to get into that in a little while when we get on the Food Time show. Because we're going to check in again with the National Air and Space Museum here in Washington, D.C., where I am doing the show this morning. I don't know if you know, they have a whole museum here in Washington dedicated just to Robert Young. Smithsonian.
Do they have the stethoscope and the little air mask that you saw at the beginning of the show?
You know, the Smithsonian very well may have something of Robert Young, so because
that's true.
He was, I mean, it was a long time ago, and a lot of people don't remember his shows, but these were very popular TV shows back in the 50s, in the case of Father Knows Best. And what was the
Marcus Welby
was the 70s? Was that the
70s? Yeah, 60s right. And 70s, early 70s, yes.
So they may have some stuff because they do have artifacts from popular television shows, not at the Air and Space Museum, but at other parts of the Smithsonian where they salute pop culture. They do have props and things from popular television shows.
I think they have Fonzie's leather jacket from Happy Days.
Yeah, Archie Bunker's the chair that Archie Bunker used to sit in is still at the Smithsonian Institute. So they do have stuff like that. So,
do they have the squad car from Andy Griffith?
Don't know. They should.
If they don't, I'm not going then.
All right. We're going to be at the Air and Space Museum tonight doing the red carpet, interviewing Tom Cruise, Henry Cavill, Angela Bassett, Simon Pegg.
Robert Young,
who makes an appearance in this new Mission Impossible movie. We'll interview all of them, and we'll feature the interviews tomorrow on the WGN-TV Morning News. But when we come back, I hope everyone is finding as interesting as I have been this morning, learning about some of the things in this Air and Space Museum. I think it's a really cool place, and I hope that you'll come and visit it when you're here in Washington, D.C. But hopefully we can just bring you a little bit of a taste of some of the very, very cool artifacts that you can see when you go there. We'll check in with the museum again in a minute. Next on WGN. Tom Cruise memory, a little bit of air history as well, with the memory of that movie. 12:21 now in Dean Richards in Washington, D.C. on WGN. So we go back to the National Air and Space Museum now, where I'll be covering the red carpet tonight of the new Tom Cruise movie, Mission Impossible. Joining us is Valerie Neal, who's the chair of the Space History Museum. Valerie, welcome back. Nice to have you on with us. Are you guys getting ready for the big Tom Cruise event at the museum tonight?
Yes, it's going to be very exciting tonight, I'm sure. It's raining right now. I hope that tapers off in time so it doesn't dampen the festivities and the enthusiasm.
Yeah, Tom Cruise in this new movie, I don't know if you've had a chance to see it yet. It was previewed at the museum last night. He jumps out of airplanes and, drives helicopters. And, he's a very it's a very aviation-oriented movie. I guess that's why they're having the event at the museum tonight.
I have not seen it, but certainly those films and Tom Cruise are both known for their adventuresomeness. So it sounds like this one is loaded with that.
Yes, it very definitely is. I can tell you that, having seen it last night. Talk to me a little about some of the artifacts at the museum, the history-related artifacts that are the most popular ones at the Air and Space Museum.
Sure. Sure. I'll be happy to talk to you, especially about the ones on the space side. But, of course, everybody who comes here wants to see the Wright brothers' first aircraft from 1903, the one that they flew on the sandbanks at Kitty Hawk. And it's important for people to understand that all of the aircraft and spacecraft here are the real ones. These aren't models and replicas, except in very rare cases for perhaps a spacecraft that didn't have a backup and didn't come back, one of the probes out to the planets, for example. But everything else is the real thing, and that's the magic of this museum, is that you really are seeing history. So on the space side, we have all of the Mercury and Gemini and Apollo craft that were flown and safely returned. There was one Mercury craft that sank, and we don't have that one, but we do have the complete collection of flown aircraft, spacecraft. We have all of the spacesuits from the Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo programs. We had for years the prototype of the space shuttle Enterprise, and then we gave up Enterprise when we received Discovery, the most often flown of the fleet of space shuttles. We have backup Voyager and Viking spacecraft, the first ones to venture out into the deep solar system, the Voyagers, and then Viking, the first to land on Mars. In a more contemporary vein, we have models, engineering models of the rovers that are currently active on the surface of Mars, Spirit and Opportunity and Curiosity. These are the engineering test models that were used to work out all the maneuvers and the performance of the hardware. We have the engineering model of the Hubble Space Telescope, which astonishes people with its size. I think hardly anybody realizes that it's as large as a motor coach or a bus that travels on the highways. It's a big telescope.
Right.
And then we have lots of smaller things. We have hand tools that the astronauts use. We have some of their uniforms. We have space food. We have
is that the dehydrated space food? I saw it at the gift shop when I was there last night. The dehydrated chocolate ice cream, and you know, the things that we imagine that the astronaut or Nazis eat. I don't even know if they do still eat that stuff anymore.
Well, that's actually a commercial product that was never developed for astronauts or flown in space. There's a little bit of a myth about that, but it's a hugely successful commercial product. But one of our most popular spacecraft never actually flew in space, but it imaginatively flew in space, and that is the Star Trek Starship Enterprise, which also have on display in the Milestones of Flight Hall. It's the first popular culture imaginary item to go on display there. But Star Trek and Star Wars and many other space science fiction books and movies have had a tremendous impact on public perception of spaceflight.
Of course, it had to be many people's introductions, I would think, into having an interest in space. Do I understand correctly that the Concorde space shuttle is on display at your facility in Chantilly, Virginia?
Yes, we do have the Concorde, an Air France Concorde, on display out there. It's a beautiful, streamlined aircraft, and one of the largest we have on display out there. But we have about 150 aircraft there that used to be in storage, or they weren't yet in the collection. And we built the Udvar-Hazy Center to be able to bring more aircraft and spacecraft out of storage, put them on display so the public could see them. And then every now and then we have a fly-in with a new delivery, and that's very exciting. The SR-71 Blackbird that we have on display there was actually flown in here and set a coast-to-coast record during its fly-in. I think it was 63 minutes from California to the Atlantic and back to the museum.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing.
Pretty amazing. But the beautiful thing about this unparalleled collection is we have some of the earliest ever spacecraft and aircraft and some of the most modern. We don't have everything yet. There's still plenty to collect. But that's part of what a curator's job is, to keep building the collection, refining it. Every now and then we let something go because it's a duplicate or because we need to make room for something else. But curators and historians both tend to be collectors and even pack rats.
Yeah.
And so we collect as much as we can get away with.
I think that a lot of us can relate to that. Now, are there some brand new exhibits? Maybe one in particular doesn't really have anything to do with the historical aspect of what you have on display there, but something that's going on right now that might be worth mentioning.
Well, all of our exhibits do have historical components, but the one that is purely scientific and engineering in nature is called How Things Fly, and it really is the starting point for understanding how aviation and spaceflight work. And everything in that gallery is touchable, it's hands-on, there are experiments you can do to understand lift and drag and thrust. There's a little amphitheater in it where explainers give demonstrations several times a day, and there's even a little maker lab where kids can do their own experiments with aerodynamics and try to design an airplane that will stay in the air or a rocket that will launch. So that gallery is more what you would encounter in a science and technology center than a museum, in that it really is hands-on basic learning. We have a new one under development that's going to be very exciting, I think, and instead of focusing on a period in history, it's going to focus on speed, and it's called A Nation of Speed, and it will open in the early 2020s, but we'll have automobiles in the exhibit as well as aircraft, cars that we're borrowing from the Museum of American History, and we're going to talk about the quest to go faster, faster, faster in many different dimensions of life.
I think you could put that exhibit on any of our Chicago area expressways, where the desire is to go faster, faster, faster all the time.
That's a great idea. And, you know, people have tried all different ways to go faster, too, sometimes at their own peril, like strapping rockets to themselves or creating a sled that has a rocket on it and just seeing how fast they can go and how many G-forces they can stand. So I think this exhibit is going to be a real thrill for people to see.
There's so many interesting things to see at the National Air and Space Museum. You can get more information at airandspace.si.edu, airandspace.si.edu. And Valerie Neal, the chair of the Space History Department. Valerie, maybe we'll see you hanging out with Tom Cruise tonight.
Oh, that would be a thrill. We're delighted that you're here with us for these couple of days. It's great to have you here.
It's really, really interesting, really fun to see all the exhibits there. Thank you, Valerie. We'll take a quick break and update news coming up next on WGN. A news update and then our Food Time show this week. It's National Hot Dog Month, and I thought the best way to celebrate that is to talk about our favorite places to go to grab a hot dog in Chicago. This is, one of the most active subjects that we ever bring up on WGN Radio, and the phones go nuts because everybody has their own favorite hot dog place. I've said many times that Gene and Jude's is my favorite out in River Grove. Schwanee, what's your favorite hot dog place?
Right now, I've got two of them, Devil Dogs and Super Dog.
Where's the Devil Dogs?
Devil Dogs is on South State Street. As Polk runs right into State, it's right in that complex there.
All right. Well, we're going to have to talk more about that and find out why that makes it your favorite. Andy, your favorite dog?
It remains the Works in Glenview.
the works. That's a famous place. We'll talk more about those, but get on our phone line and tell me your favorite hot dog place, why they are the greatest. 312-981-7200. It all follows WGN News, sponsored by Lindeman Chimney and Fireplace. Here's Dave Schwann.
A man with a passion for boating. That's how Chicago Yacht Club Rear Commodore Nick Berberian describes John Santorelli, the sailor who remains missing after he went overboard just after the start of the Mackinac race yesterday. Crew members reported Santorelli went in after a large wave hit the boat, pulling him over. Crews continue the search this afternoon. Officials at the two amphibious vehicle tour operators in the Wisconsin Dells say they have no plans to change the way they're operating, this after the fatal accident on Table Rock Lake in Missouri that killed 17 people in a duck boat on Thursday of last week. The operators say the vessels don't get more than 100 feet from shore and can return to land in about a minute if they get in trouble. Chicago police are looking for four gunmen after seven people were shot, one fatally in East Garfield Park around 9 o'clock last night. The victims were sitting on a bench near Fulton and Albany. WGN Sports, Andy Mazur.
Well, there's a new leader in the clubhouse now at the Open Championship in Scotland. A little bit of a different time zones there, huh? I knew I was going to do that one of these
very
times.
Very desert-like yeah. In Scotland, yeah. Too.
Scotland, Scottsdale, you know, potato, same potato, thing. Right? You knew what I meant. At Carnoustie, Francesco Molinari is in the clubhouse at 8 under par. He has a one-shot lead on the field right now. Xander Schauffele is one shot back at 7. He is playing 17 right now. Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy both in the clubhouse at 6 under par. Kevin Kisner now coming up on 18 fairway. He is two shots back. Tiger Woods finished the day even par and is 5 under for the tournament. He is done for the day. His rounds go 71, 71, 66. And 71. They'll crown the champion golfer of the year here very shortly at Carnoustie. White Sox and the Mariners this afternoon. It's the final game of the three-game series. White Sox can win the series with a victory today. I'll have your pregame at 2:35. Ed and DJ, the first pitch from Safeco Field in Seattle at 3:10. Reynaldo Lopez against Marco Gonzalez. On the north side, they're battling some raindrops. The tarp is off the field, though. They're trying to get the game in between the Cubs and the Cardinals. Final game of their five-game series. A 1:20 start time at Wrigley Field. Jose Quintana against All-Star Miles Michaelis. On the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and Chicago White Sox baseball, Andy Mazur, WGN Sports.
WGN traffic on the Kennedy. We're looking at a 40-minute trip from O'Hare to downtown. Downtown out to O'Hare, also a 40-minute ride. The Stevenson inbound, 35 minutes from Veterans Tollway to Lakeshore Drive. The Eisenhower, a half hour from Wolf Road to downtown. And a backup on the Lakeshore Drive northbound from Marquette to Hollywood, a 35-minute trip, due in part to the half marathon that is wrapped up now in Grant Park. But there's still some residual closures there, particularly Columbus Drive between Balbo and Monroe, which will be closed until 3 o'clock this afternoon.
All you runners, go home.
I think they're about ready to.
Go home.
I can report from firsthand experience that Columbus Drive has now reopened. There's normal traffic proceeding across the bridge as we look down from our penthouse newsroom here on the 18th floor.
Penthouse newsroom?
Yes.
That sounds like a television show Hugh Hefner would have hosted.
I was just trying to add a little spice, you know?
Yeah, it did that.
For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app. It's approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago.
Hey,
and
welcome to Penthouse Newsroom. I'm Dave Schwartz.
And Andy's got his own room over there.
Uh-huh. In my lounging robe, smoking a pipe with his slippers. The very latest in the Penthouse Newsroom.
Well, we have one more sponsorship to read for traffic.
Oh, I love those.
And this is called Spot Hero.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter the promo code SMART, S-M-A-R-T, for $10 off. Spot Hero. Park smarter. And the forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Beach hazard advisory this afternoon. Possible rip currents along Lake Michigan. Becoming partly sunny later in the afternoon. Highs in the 80s inland, cooler near the lake. Partly cloudy overnight, a low in the 60s. Sunny tomorrow, high in the 80s inland, the 70s near the lakeshore. 71 at Midway and O'Hare, and 70 at Chicago's lakefront.
I'm in the penthouse newsroom.
I'm Dave Schwann in the WGN Radio penthouse.
Well, look, there's Ann Margaret in the penthouse newsroom.
And this is the stuff that matters on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Live from Washington, D.C. this week, it's Dean Richards. We'll be on the red carpet for the new Mission Impossible movie. A little bit later on, we'll bring you my interview with Tom Cruise and the rest of the cast of the movie. Tomorrow on the WGN-TV Morning News, we'll play the entire interviews for you next Sunday right here. But on our Food Time show today, sponsored by our friends, by the way, at the Greek Islands restaurants in Chicago, thought we would celebrate National Hot Dog Month. It's been, this month, I don't know exactly what it means. I'm guessing that it probably was invented by hot dog manufacturers to get dopes like me to talk about hot dogs. But, hey, that's fine. It worked. We celebrate. I think we have a special affection for hot dogs in the Chicago area, and we're very proud of our Chicago-style dogs. But there are many, many, many places. And what I'm trying to find out from you today are, where are your favorite hot dog joints? And Schwanee said that he likes, what would you say, Schwanee? Flukies?
No, Devil's Dogs.
Devil
I like
Dogs.
Flukies too, but Devil
what
Dogs.
What was the other one that you said?
And Super Dog.
Super Dog. That's Super Dog.
Very quickly, though, I just want to throw in, growing up, though, without a doubt, two favorite places, both drive-ins, Dog and Suds.
Oh, yeah.
And the Blue Top Drive-In in Highland.
I am not familiar with that one, but Dog and Suds.
Love Dog and Suds.
All over Chicago. You drive up. You didn't even have to get out of your car, right?
Yes, that's right. Hot dogs, hamburgers, no spaghetti and meatballs.
Beer. Root beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that delicious root beer that they had.
French fries, too. The fries were great.
That's what makes the experience, and that's why I want to find out favorite places. I mentioned that I love Gene and Jude's that's out on in River Grove. I love it because it's, when I was a kid, we used to go to this place called Carl's on basically 83rd and Jeffrey, where it's South Chicago Avenue. It's a kind of a diagonal, and it all connects. But that's where Carl's was, and it literally was a shack. And you get a hot dog. Get this, for a quarter. Hmm. You get a hot dog with the works, and then a giant order of fries right on top of the hot dog. And it was all wrapped up together, so it gets all greasy and steamy. And, oh, man, were those delicious. Gene and Jude's now serves their hot dogs. They always have. They serve them the same way, fries right inside with the hot dogs. And that's why I love that the most. Anything special, Andy, the one that you mentioned in Glenview?
Yeah, the works. I was right across from my grade school, so every once in a while, my friends and I would get notes from our parents to say we could go off campus to eat lunch, and we'd walk over to the works. It's been owned by the same brothers. I think it opened with two other guys that owned it. They sold out real quickly, and I think this was like 1977, so George and Andy have owned it for a long time. I've gone in there my entire life, and just it's just a great little atmosphere. It's not a huge place, but they specialize in the Euros, but their hot dogs are terrific.
Where are they in Glenview?
So they're on Golf Road, just a little bit east of Golf Mill Shopping Center.
Okay.
What did you say their name was? George and Andy?
Yeah, George recently passed away, but Andy and his son are now running it.
Sounds like a couple of good Greek guys.
Oh, yeah, they were in there, and they're so friendly, and everybody that's worked there has worked there forever. I mean, the same people worked there when I walked in the door last week. You know, I mean, it's the same guys that were there when I was a kid.
It's one of those places where everybody's family that works there. That's
family joints. Yeah, you got to sort of love that a little bit. Now, Carol's on the line. Carol, your favorite hot dog place is?
The Flip Grill in the Rivers Casino.
The Rivers Casino is not one I would have pegged for a favorite hot dog place. But tell me why it's so great.
Well, they grill the hot dog, and then it's served on like a lobster roll, a bigger, thicker roll like that, and that's grilled also. And it has some mustard, green relish, onions, chopped tomatoes, sports peppers, and a thin slice of pickle slice over it, and celery salt if you like.
Well, see, the couple of things there making it different. Number one, you're saying that it's grilled, and a lot of the Chicago hot dog places, they steam them.
Yes.
But grilled is great. I love them when they're, you know, like a little, I would say a little on the burnt side. It's not burnt, but you know what I mean. They're a little on the darker side. I like a little crunch to a grilled dog. But those lobster
usually
rolls.
Usually not, but the big roll is something, yeah.
Yeah, and the roll is probably buttered. Usually when you get a lobster roll like that, they're buttered and toasted.
Toasted, yes.
Oh, that sounds good. That sounds really great. And what's it called again?
Slip the Grill in the Rivers Casino.
Rivers Casino in Des Plaines, right?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Hey, you know what? Can I send you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for calling us up today?
Yes, thanks a lot.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for calling us. We appreciate that. Let me see if we can. Not sure if I'm doing this right on our phone system here, but we're going to go to Pat next on line two. Hi, you're on WGN.
Well, thank you. The best place, and they've got awards that are listed up there.
Uh-oh. I think we lost them. We did. Uh-oh. Something's happened. I don't know what's going on with our phone system here. See if we can get line two back. In the meantime, I'm going to go here to line three and see what's happening. Hi, you're on WGN.
Hello?
Yes, hi. This is Dean.
Hi. Hi, Dean. The best hot dog stand, at least, or one of the best, Jimmy's Red Hots, Grand and Pulaski, much better than Gene and June's.
Really? Tell me why.
Twice as many fries, and you know they clean the grease and oil every 10 or 15 years whether it needs it or not, so the fries have a lot of character. But yeah, I was very disappointed in Gene and Jude's. We once did five hot dog stands in a day, and Gene and Jude's finished last.
Really?
Jimmy's Red Hots, Grand and Pulaski. Been there like forever. Like
I've heard of Jimmy's. Days. I've never been there, so I guess I'm going to have to give it a try.
A stand-up place. I mean, there's no sit-down. It's not fancy.
Yeah, I sort of like those, you know, it's a real Chicago joint, it sounds like, right?
Well, in the old days, you could not make it to your car before the grease made it through the brown paper bag, so you knew it was a good hot dog.
That's the sign of a good hot dog and fries. Now, do they serve their fries right on top of the hot dog as well?
Yeah, I think so. Been a while, but it's, yeah, I mean, we're talking wonderful food, terrible for you, obviously, but great.
You know, once in a while, you got to splurge a little bit, right?
Absolutely.
Hang on for a second. I'm going to get you a Lou Malnati's pizza as well. And I'm not even going to mess just to our control room here. I'm not going to mess with any of the buttons in front of me. So I'm going to go to, let's go back to line one. I think it's Pat who's called back in again. Hi, Pat. Thanks for calling back. You're on WGN.
Connected. I just heard that, gentlemen. The national awards go to Gene and Jude, so you can walk in there, and you might have 100 people ahead of you to get the, and they put the fries on top of the hot dogs.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have mustard, but man, it's been there forever, and I don't know, I mean, if you look at the wall, you see those national awards, and they're great people, but they're so fast with all the people that come in. I mean, you're outside the door, in the parking lot, and they move quickly. They take good care of you, but they do so much business. But they've been around for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm going to have the owners on sometime. We've never really talked to them, and I would like to learn the history because it's a legendary place for sure. And I'm glad that you mentioned, you know, when you pull up to Gene and Jude's, almost always you see a line of people out the door, and it scares you a little bit.
Yes.
It's like, oh, this is going to take forever. But they get you in and out of that place. It's a well-oiled machine, if you'll excuse the expression. You know.
Yeah, it is. And not only that, one of the greatest things is, I mean, those awards aren't given out by people in the neighborhood. Those are national awards that are up on their wall when you pay and then you walk around, you're walking out the door. Those haven't been just picked out by me, and I'm 69 years old, but they've been picked out by a lot of people, and they're great.
Yeah, there are, you know, people who are, I don't want to exactly call them foodies, you know, judging hot dogs, but the, you know, people who are into that, that's definitely what they love, that's for sure. I appreciate your call, Pat. I have got a pair of tickets to join me at Ravinia to see Raiders of the Lost Ark with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra on August the 8th. If you'll hold on for just a second, we'll get all the information from you for that. As we go down to line four, and I believe we're going to talk to Paul here. Yeah, hi, Paul. You're on WGN.
Hi, Dean. Really enjoy the show every week. And,
thank you.
You know, to be totally transparent, I live in Evanston, but I'm always crossing the border to go to Skokie. So in Evanston, of course, Mustard's Last Stand, which is in the shadow of Ryan Field next to the football stadium.
Classic. I just drove by there the other day, and if I wasn't rushed, I was going to stop.
But when I cross the border and go into Skokie, there's literally two places literally almost down the block from each other. One's called Poochie's, and one's called Herm's Palace. They're both on Dempster.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, really close to the Evanston border, a little bit west of McCormick. And they're both great. I'd say Herm's Palace is probably a little more divey, but still has great food. Poochie's is a little more finished, but they also have a wide variety of things. But they both really excel with their preparation of hot dogs. I, like you, tend to like them in the char dog mode as opposed to the steam mode, and they both do a great job of that. And their fries are both, you know, hand-cut fresh every day. And I think probably Poochie's has a little bit of a shake selection where Herm's Palace doesn't, but they're both really, really good, you know, destinations.
I couldn't agree with you more. And both of these, well, actually all three of the places, Mustard's Last Stand, Poochie's, and Herm's, they have to have been open 50 years, I'll bet. 40. I know that I was going to Poochie's and Herm's in the 70s, mid to late 70s. So I
agree. I think 50 years probably for all three of them, and probably one or two of those probably longer than that. So I think when you stand the test of time like that, you'd like to think that means it's pretty darn good.
I wonder what it is. I mean, you know, a lot of these places, they're serving, you know, the Chicago-style dog, basically. But some places, just there's something different about some places over the other. Sometimes it's the fries. Sometimes, you know, they do a char instead of a steam, you know, different things. I wonder what it is. I wonder if there's some emotional attachment, you know, also.
And I'm not sure what happened to it, but Wiener and Still Champion, also in Evanston, was there for years and years and years. And Gus, I think, is the owner. They just suddenly went out of business. I'm not sure what happened there.
A lot of times I think, you know, some of those family places, the kids don't want to take over the family business, so they just decide to close them down. And, you know, these guys who slaved over hot grills all those years just decide to call it quits for a while. Interesting place, like, you know, some of the places that get the most attention, like Wiener's Circle. We didn't get any calls on that today. They make a good grilled hot dog also.
And I was going to mention, in my days in the city, that was my favorite destination. But I understand that they might be either moving or going out of business because of a real estate situation.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. The original location on Clark Street. Is it Clark? Yeah, Clark Street. It's not Broadway.
Clark and Wrightwood. And I remember going there late at night after concerts, and you could always count on profanity from the people that take the orders, and part of the charm of that place.
You get a hot dog and an earful at the same time.
Exactly, and some nice four-letter words.
That's exactly. It was part of the charm at 2 o'clock in the morning. Hang on for a second. I want to get you a pair of tickets also to join us at Ravinia. I'll be hosting Raiders of the Lost Ark with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra on August the 2nd. If you'll hang out for a quick second, we'll get the info from you on that. That should be a spectacular night. Both August 2nd is Raiders of the Lost Ark with the CSO, and the night before that, August 1st, I'll be hosting E.T. the Extraterrestrial at Ravinia, and we're going to have a pre-movie discussion before the movie and the live performance from Chicago Symphony Orchestra. It's a lot of fun, and you know Ravinia is beautiful, and it's, you know, so much fun. People come out and put blankets and enjoy the movie and the music. Some people like to sit in the pavilion, you know, they prefer that, but either way, it should be a lot of fun, and we have fun talking about the movies and, you know, kind of tee things up for the evening. So that's August 1st and 2nd at Ravinia in Highland Park. E.T. the Extraterrestrial on August 1st, and Raiders of the Lost Ark with the CSO on August the 2nd. So we hope to see you out there for that. You can enjoy the warm Mediterranean ambiance of authentic Greek dining at the award-winning Greek Islands Restaurant. Extra virgin olive oil and seafood, wines, herbs, spices, all imported directly from Greece, providing delicious and healthy meals. Summertime makes it ideal to enjoy your meals al fresco while trying some of their lighter dining options, like the delicious grilled octopus salad or the cold lima beans, baked Mediterranean-style salmon, which is one of my favorites. They have over 40 entrees from which to choose. You'll definitely find a favorite. Since 1971, the Greek Islands has been Chicago's first choice for great food and reasonable prices, the perfect place to meet for a business lunch, family dinner, or to stop in before a game or show. The Greek Islands Restaurant, with party rooms to accommodate 20 to 120, now also with catering. Visit the Greek Islands in Chicago, 200 South Halsted Street at Adams, or in Lombard, 300 East 22nd Street. Free parking is available at both locations. The Greek Islands, America's most popular Greek restaurants. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us today. We will see you Monday through Friday around 8:10 in the morning on Steve Cochran's show here on radio. And, of course, Monday through Friday on the WGN Morning News with my entertainment reports. Tomorrow I'll be live again here in Washington, D.C., be live at the National Air and Space Museum, and hopefully we can show you some of the cool things that we've been talking about all morning. Frank Fontana is coming up next on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users say play WGN radio on TuneIn. And don't forget, Steve Cochran celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720.